then responses were inadequate. So that's why we are having a follow-up with a view to get the responses that will be satisfactory to the committee. And as I said, we really wish that we could limit our interaction with the university, find a way of closing this chapter and allowing the leadership to attend to the issues. And as we do with all other universities, we keep on coming to check if things are going proper. We normally invite the unions and the SRC to address us as we come, but on this occasion, we are dealing with matters which could not be finalized in the last meeting, and I think we did get a briefing from TEU and from NEHAU and from the SRC on the last occasion. So we thought that it's not necessary now because it's a follow-up on the issues that were raised in that meeting. Maybe just to explain the absence of the three critical stakeholders in the university. I think I saw the gentleman who prepared that report for the university, Mr. Tennyson. Is it Tennyson or Tennyson? I think I saw his video was on. I'm going to invite you, sir, to switch on your video and switch on your mic, and then address the committee with regard to your report. We have got about, say, 30 minutes for that. But if you still need more time, you can indicate. But I thought that 30 minutes, you can summarize the issues for us. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I prepared a PowerPoint presentation, which I sent through to Anele. I don't know if he's going to share it, if you just want me to read from the PowerPoint presentation.
Good to share.
Is Anele going to share, or do you want me to share, Chair?
Yeah, if you are able to share, maybe we can allow you to share with us.
I will certainly try.
Anele can help you to, can allow you to share the presentation with us. Can you do that, Anele?
Yes, Chair, he can just share it.
Okay. All right, please.
When you say just share it, I'm not entirely sure how to do that. Oh, share screen, okay.
Sorry, there's an icon there on the bottom of your screen. Yeah, sure.
Okay, can you see it now, Chair?
Yeah, we can see it.
All right. Anele asked me to prepare a PowerPoint presentation, which I did yesterday. And really, I'll just take you through the highlights of the report. There were concerns by certain stakeholders, and an independent report, factual findings report, was commissioned by the University Council, and which was going to be considered by a three-person ad hoc committee of the Council. Following a procurement process within the university, I was appointed to perform the factual findings and present a report. I was assisted in doing this with Ms. Antti Romalo and Dr. Antonio Pui, and they were also formed part of the brief originally. Antti Romalo wasn't at the time, but she's currently the chair of the King Committee on Corporate Governance. Dr. Antonio Pui is a forensic specialist running his own company, Exactec, at the time, and I think he's since joined SNG Grant Thornton. But So they assisted me in doing this, and the three of us worked on the report, and that was done in the procurement process as well. You know, I actually said that they would be assisting. I was asked to propose a methodology, which I did, and it was accepted by the ad hoc committee, and that's set out on pages 7 to 16 of the report. The report is 125 pages long. The methodology reflects the proposed approach compared with or alongside the actual approach that was adopted in relation to the terms of reference furnished by the ad hoc committee. I was appointed at the beginning of April 2020, in fact on the 1st of April, and the report was finalized on the 19th of June, and this report was presented virtually to the TUT Council on the 29th of January 2021. So that's about, 5 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago. There were several postponements for different reasons. Initially, the report was due to be presented on the 19th of June last year. I do want to point out, Chair, that for a full appreciation of the scope of work, the methodology, the findings and the recommendations, the Portfolio Committee should consider the report in its entirety. Obviously, this PowerPoint presentation, there are only 6 slides, and I'm going to focus on the main issues. I would also like to particularly thank the Registrar, Mr. Mishatoni, and the Council Secretariat, Mr. Yonis Nkabudi, for assisting us in coordinating and obtaining information. I was appointed shortly after the shutdown, the COVID-19 shutdown, so the work was done almost exclusively virtually, except for a couple of presentations to people at the university. Which was done in person. The report itself is set out under the heading for each of the terms of reference, giving the, and I want to emphasize this, the background, the observations and recommendations, and the proposed corrective measures. And what I wanted to say was, in terms of the preparation and finalization of the report, I'd particularly like the Portfolio Committee to be cognizant of the fact that interviews were conducted with various parties. We conducted a number of interviews, as indicated on pages 82 and 83 of the report. The previous chairman of the TUT Council did not avail himself for an interview. We tried on several occasions. I do know at the time he was the MEC for Health in Gauteng, and with the COVID difficulties that he was experiencing, he didn't avail himself for an interview, despite us saying, look, we do it at night or over weekend at his convenience. Further, the external auditor and the outsourced company secretary of Tute did not avail themselves for an interview. They did not want to be interviewed. A vast amount of information was provided, and that's set out on pages 118 to 125 of the report, which is at the end of the report. But we got, can I say, a plethora of information that was given to us. We were further informed that an independent entity had apparently furnished a report on governance matters within 2 days, but we're not able to obtain details of the independent entity who did this report, nor did we receive a copy of the report. I cannot confirm that such a report was actually done, but that was what we were informed. And the other important aspect today is that, relevant aspect, is that up to the end of March 2019, the university had funded Tute to the tune of $27,490,000 the university had injected into Tute. As I've said, the findings as detailed in the report should be judiciously considered by the council as well as the recommendations. But the major issues that are highlighted in the report are the following, and some of these could clearly be contested or could be subject to debate. But at the end, I'll say that some we actually recommended that further action be taken by the University Council. But firstly, there appeared to us to be no logical basis for Tute to be housed in a separate legal entity. Tute is a separate company, instead of being operated as a division within the university. The fact that Tute is housed in a separate legal entity and it itself has subsidiary companies with boards and committees in each of these companies adds to the cost. But the other aspect that I think is very relevant is the fact that with Tute being housed in a separate company, it would be subject, obviously Tute was set up for to generate third stream income, but it would be subject to income tax at a rate of 28%. So for every million rand net earnings or taxable earnings that Tute made, they would have to forego 280,000 to the tax man, which to us, I must say, just seemed completely illogical for it to be housed in a separate entity. That was the first issue. The second issue was that we believe that third stream income should be managed and directed with persons with the appropriate commercial skills, qualifications, and experience, instead of being managed and directed predominantly by persons with academic experience. There was, a large duplication. The people who were on the university council were also on the boards and the subcommittees of Tute and its subsidiary company. And these persons obviously had been appointed to the Tute council because of their experience in academia and other aspects, but not with the commercial experience for running third stream income.
Yeah.
So the third aspect, Chair, is that third stream income generating activities, whether or not within a separate company or a division of the university, should be appropriately governed, which wasn't in place at Tute. The absent or inadequate aspects that we found were governance skills within the board of directors. We found that based on the information that was presented, it was clear that Tute was not being properly governed. Financial management, in other words, regular monthly financial reports or even quarterly financial reports, budgets and any revisions to the budgets. Some were presented, but it was difficult to find out what budget had been approved and whether revisions to the budget had been approved. And they didn't seem to have gone through the board structures for approval. So the financial management was lacking. Risk management, yeah. There was no risk register, and risk management wasn't properly done. And performance management, the performance of the executives within Tute and the subsidiaries, as well as the board, there was inadequate performance management, or even absent performance. Going on to the next page, Chair, there were no additional or innovative income streams that were being generated by Tute. Compared with what had been generated by the university previously, Tute was largely relying on short-term learning or short courses and student accommodation, which is what was being done by the university previously. So we believe that Tute, for innovative income streams, and I know there was talk that they were looking at certain aspects, but there were no different income streams other than the student accommodation and short-term learning programs. The fifth aspect, Chair, as I've already mentioned, was the taxation consideration should be properly considered for the benefit of the university. Just foregoing 28% to the fiscus and housing it in a separate company, with the additional costs of running a separate company, in other words, board fees, et cetera, I felt was inappropriate. Additionally, certain persons within Tute were being paid board fees for being on, within the university, were being paid board fees for being on Tute or subsidiary companies as well. And we believe that, you know, if you're doing that and it's part of your salaried remuneration, you shouldn't get board fees over and above that. But obviously that's a decision that needs to be taken by the university. There was a particular concern about employment practices at Tute. Certain persons had been appointed and were being remunerated without any apparent proper process or justification for their appointment and their increased salary. There was also an observation that one person was being remunerated by the university as well as by Tute. Based on the stakeholders we interviewed, there's large disenchantment with Tute and how it's being operated.
Yeah.
And obviously stakeholders are critically important in any entity, but particularly in a university. Again, conflicts of interest are not being optimally managed, and those conflicts, what we ascertained, and bearing in mind, Chair, that this was a factual findings report and not a forensic investigation, but what we ascertained that there were certain lifestyle changes of individuals from the inception of Tute. We didn't investigate those, but we, as the recommendations later, we believe that those should be investigated. Coordination between the university itself and Tute, and the, obviously the interrelationship, is problematic. There was a coordinating committee that had been set up, but it had met infrequently, and there was a concern that this coordinating committee was actually dictated by the university without Tute's issues being addressed or appropriately addressed. And then, Chair, the further matters for consideration, were, which I've already alluded to, I haven't the first one, actually. The student accommodation and the concomitant third-stream income generated by the student accommodation is a concern of stakeholders. There was unhappiness from various people about how student accommodation is allocated, how the money is being generated, and we believe that the University Council should consider independently investigating these concerns and allegations, which was beyond the ambit of our brief, but we believe that that should be done. And also, as I've mentioned, the recruitment and the remuneration paid specifically to two gentlemen, Mr. Mapanga and Mr. Mogashoa, should be independently investigated as well to ascertain whether or not there were or are any irregularities which require appropriate action. I've also spoken about lifestyle checks, which should be conducted on various individuals, which are indicated on pages 90 and 91 of the report, to ascertain whether or not there are any irregularities requiring appropriate action in respect of them. And Chair, I know you said I have half an hour. I think I've done it in significantly less than half an hour. But those are the PowerPoint slides I have highlighting issues on the report. And Chair, if you have any further questions or you want any further clarification, obviously I'm happy to give that right now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dennison. You can stop sharing with us now.
Thank you. I'll try and do that. I'm not entirely sure how to do that. Sorry. Is that off now, Chair? Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your mic and your video. All right, I think we're going to move to receive a presentation by TUT. I believe the Chair and the Vice Chancellor will be doing that, and probably maybe Tute will also have to do that to talk to us. I just needed to address the issue about members of the public attending the meetings. Now, the current rules that govern the National Assembly is the 9th edition that we are using. Now, in terms of Rule 184 of the Rules of the National Assembly, it talks about meetings, admission of public. I just want to read it for the purposes of everybody who's attending, because I think, although I'm not obligated to do that, but I think as we continue to hold this meeting, we should also use it for public education. So it says that meetings of committees and subcommittees are open to the public, including the media, and the chairperson of the committee or subcommittee may not exclude the public, including the media, from the meeting except when A, legislation, This rule for resolution of the assembly provides for the committee or subcommittee to meet in a closed session. Or B, the committee or subcommittee is considering a matter which is one, of a private nature that is prejudicial to a particular person, two, protected under parliamentary privilege or for any other reason privileged in terms of the law, or confidential in terms of legislation. So in terms of these rules of the National Assembly, as I've already indicated, everybody is allowed to join this meeting, including members of the media. So we don't have a reason to remove people from the meeting. I thought I must just make that one clear since it was raised initially, although the manner in which it was raised was itself very regular in terms of our rules, but we understand that we've got a duty to educate. Can we invite the chair, Mr. Manyoni, sorry, my apologies, and later on, take us through the university's part. Over to you.
Good morning to the Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Mr. Mopulani. Good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee. On behalf of TET, again, my name is Chetsin Manyoni, and I'm glad that the Chairperson did correct my surname. And with me, I'm accompanied by the members of Council who are in attendance, ESCO members, also the Vice Chancellor for the University, Prof. Lauren van Staden, and also the CEO of TUTE, Mr. Nick Mudvasi. So, Chair, we have taken all the necessary arrangements to make sure that we get a comprehensive team to respond to some of the questions that have been put forward. And Chair, first I must concur with you. It's in the interest of TUT, myself representing the university in its totality, its stakeholders, academic staff, people at work in the university, the students, and its different stakeholders, our donors, our investors, our community that we represent, to share your sentiment how that we should, and I hope that we do bring this matter to a close, and we do get to a point that you said in your comment, in opening remarks, Chair, that you like this matter to come to some form of conclusion. So we have every intention to cooperate and work with the Portfolio Committee because we do understand your role and the importance of your role. And we are mindful that as a public institution that we need to make sure that we do things in a particular way. And especially to TM, so Chair, you know, that is the biggest university of technology in Africa. So we've got a serious brand equity that we need to protect all of us here. Having said that, Chair, I must put on record that I am, of course, on behalf of the university, surprised that Mr. Dinesen was invited to the presentation because as far as when we got the brief in terms of agenda, we didn't get a sight of that. However, we do acknowledge that it's your platform to invite everybody, and in fact, it's actually a good thing that is here because the process they are to following is the same process that Council followed. I'm just going through our response, and I'm going to start from a process point of view because I always believe that process is very important. But we can demonstrate to the Portfolio Committee and to everybody else that we as Council, you know, did do matters in a manner that give credit to the process. Ultimately, no matter the findings or the outcome comes, we can differ on certain things. But I think the integrity of the process is very important, and we believe that we conducted manner, in the most transparent manner, so that people can review. And I said personally to Mr. Nas myself when he interviewed me, you know, that we got nothing to hide. And I repeat, I put on records that we prepared to work. And that is why we made resources available to him to interview everybody else. We are available, all of us. We are prepared to meet and have a conversation. I think I can put it on record that most of members of the university willingly, freely participated in the exercise. I'm sure he can testify to that himself, that we are very supportive as council members and all the stakeholders within the university, because we do appreciate transparent and everything that we do. Having said that, just want to process wise, Chairperson, if you allow me, to follow up, we appointed the independent assessors, as Mr. Nas correctly said. So that was last year. We got the report, last year, which was submitted to us as council. On the council meeting of the 27th November 2020, the report was presented to members of council. Each and every member of council got a copy of the report for the entire December, that people can go and read the report and apply themselves extensively to the report. So we had enough time, I think, all of us in our best capacity. And if you correct me, how many members of council are there, you see? 25 members of council had an opportunity to study the report in detail, so that when we discuss the matter, we could have felt that we did, in all honestly, apply ourselves. So we didn't hurry the process in terms of coming to some form of conclusion or recommendation. We felt that let's give council members and chair, it's all on record. The minutes of that meeting can be made available to everybody. And I made it clear to all council members that it's very important that we seriously apply ourselves to the matters that are raised by the independent assessor. And as like as I repeat, it is on record. It was minuted. We can show the copy of the record. For subsequent to that, we then felt that it's very important that when council members apply themselves to the report, that we also give to chair an opportunity to respond to the assessor report, so that we get two versions of the same matter, so that when we apply ourselves, we can review what the assessor put forward and what was to chair responsible. Because some of the matters that were raised by the independent speaks specifically to the domain of the CEO, speak specifically to the powers given to the CEO. I think and some of this I'm going to talk to, which deals with operational members and nepotism and all things got to do with staff and all type of things. So there were specific matters I think we felt that Twitter must address those matters, so that when we do review the matter, we get a comprehensive understanding of the matters. And I must put it record, Chair, one of the things that we did when we, all of us, spoke to Mr. Dinasin, was very important to explain how Twitter structure is set up. I think it's very important that we put that in context, and I'm going to repeat again before we go to the rationale and some of the reasons. Twitter is set up that it's run as a private entity, PTY. It's set up by, it's governed by a member of a corporation, MOI, which governs pretty much how an entity should operate. We, TUT, were a shareholder. Then it's got what we call the board of directors, which is responsible for the day-to-day running of the organization, like any entity. And then the board of directors will then appoint the CEO, who is responsible for the day-to-running of the organization. Then, of course, you have the staff. Our interaction as a council through Twitter is through a shareholder representation, meaning that our job is to make sure that we constitute the proper board, so we make sure that the people that we put in there have the right skill set, the right integrity, and so forth, because then those people must deal with the matters that's getting related to the Twitter. So our role is more of a shareholder Twitter, and Mr. Dennis is correct that we have good, they will give Twitter money. Our job is to make sure that the university recover that money that we've given to Twitter. So that was a premise, I think, in terms of our rationale and how we approach this matter. Fast forward to that matter post-November. Can you move the slide, Kambule? We then convene a special meeting after that on the 18th on February, which was a special meeting called precisely to deal with the matter of Thuthe. And if I remember very well, all members of council were there. And we invited Mr. Benassin in the same format like this. We invited him to come and present to council members in detail about his report and provide some clarification and give us some context on the things that he raised. So it's a similar format. We then also in the same meeting invited the CEO to come and account from Thuthe and explain themselves. So both Mr. Dinasim and the CEO of Thuthe were given an opportunity to really present to council members their reports so that we can able to compare apples with apples and we can able to be objective with some of the things that were said. I think after they presented in that meeting, we then asked them to recuse themselves, and council members then had enough time to deliberate in terms of the content of what was raised by both reports, especially from Benassin's reports. And again, Chair, that meeting was recorded. We can make the minutes of those meetings available required. So it was all council members, 25 of them, had an opportunity to speak and apply themselves in terms of all the issues we raised. And we tried to, as possible, exhaust the matters that we put forward. After that, we then decided that what should we do as council to deal with those issues, because we do take them seriously and we must attend to them. The council in that meeting resolved that the governance, GMC, Government Management Committee, took the matter and implement the recommendations that were made by council. And council made a number of recommendations, some of them, like I said, speaks precisely to some of the issues that have been raised. And I'm going to go through those recommendations that were raised by council in detail, then I'll come back, which some of them will link up to some of the issues we raised. One of the most important that was raised, I think Mr. Benassin raised that matter, was the issue of Thuthe, whether Thuthe should be an independent entity or should be governed or should be run by as a division within the university. And I think one of the things that Mr. Dennis did not give us a sound reason based on business premise to say why Thuthe cannot be a private entity, because this is aligned with most organizations. Other universities have private entities. Thuthe is not the first one. We're not doing something that is novelty here. There are a lot of universities in France that have a similar model. UNISA, UP, VETS, Stellenbosch, it's not a unique thing. So the question was that if, for the first time, a black university set up a private entity, what is the difference? He could not articulate that to all of us as council members to say what is the rationale. Because at the heart of Thuthe, it's not the fact that university can't do this thing. It's about optimization. It's about how is a university we try to drive that revenue stream. How do we drive profit? Thuthe was set up to be a profitable business, not just because we want to do accommodation and so forth. So we could not dispute the logic of us around having a profitable business like similar to most universities out there. And on the basis of that, the council felt that we ought to give Thuthe an opportunity. It's a 2-year project. We're not talking a 5-year, 6-year company. You're talking something that's fairly young in its infancy. And we're mindful that, look, we might not have the tools and so forth. We could make mistakes. But the basic essence of it was to say, this is a new entity. It's fairly young, and we are putting some money. It ought at some point in time to demonstrate to council members that it got to pay back the loan that we gave it to it. I think that was very important to council members because, like I said, it is not a unique novelty. It's something that is done by most universities. So we're trying to benchline that. The second part around that is that even in the report, Mr. Benassin, he gave us a desktop exercise in terms of what other units are doing. So if you go to his report when he tried to benchmark Thuthe with other universities, he only quote two. And one is pretty much a desktop exercise. It's not a comprehensive exercise that it did. So we're hoping that it will give us plus minus 6-7 of similar entities to say, this is what people are doing, this is not working, and as such, what you're doing is not in line with the sectoral benchmarking. So council members felt that on the basis of that, being that is a two-year project, being the fact that there is no circular-based logic that teacher cannot have a teacher. We resolve as council that we like to keep teachers as a teacher with overriding and with the certain condition that if this thing doesn't work out, council will apply itself and we'll constantly monitor the situation of Twitter. But as a stanza, it's a very important chairperson that the money that the university put to Twitter comes back, because like I said, it was not a grant, it was a loan. So council members felt that we ought to give to them an opportunity to be profitable so that they can pay back. Because the problem, if that money doesn't come back to the university, we must write to the office wasteful expenditure. And I think that was the view from council members. The second thing that we did, we speak to, and I agree, we fully agree with Mr. Dennis when he raised the matters of governance and the board. So let's look, the board, the treaty is not strong, and all council members, we agree that there's some really valid points that he raised that we should strengthen the board. We resolve the council, reconstitute the board from scratch, which we did. We agree that the board of treaty will made up of 7 members, 4 non-executive directors, and 3 external members of council, and will provide also independent chairperson. The chairperson of the board of Tutu will be an independent person not coming from the university. I must put on record, Chair, that we did the process in the most transparent manner. We issued an advert to the public media, you know, the medias, for board members to serve on Twitter with specific skill set. You know, we are very clear in terms of what skills that we're looking for. Some of the things that you raise in terms of competencies, legalities, commerce, and governance, all of the things that we covered, and I'm sure we can even share the copy of the advert with the portfolio committee. So people had an opportunity to apply to be 9 executive directors of Twitter, and I think we received about 12 applications, if I remember, which were really highly quality, capable, competent people, which shows that the people are interested in serving in the board of Twitter. So I think we're quite surprised by the number. I was expecting less response, but I think very good response. So we heard of that. Out of those 10 or 12 shortlisted individuals, we nominated 4 to be non-executive directors of Twitter. And I think, like I said, all of those people have a set of competence skills that we believe that addresses the point that Mr. Dennis raised about the competences and the skill set. In terms of the external members of council, again, within council, we have very, very capable members of council who have business experience, who sit on boards, and who have advocacy, and I mean, we have legal background and finance background. So we selected 3 members of council who were prepared, and I must repeat here, who were voluntarily, were prepared to serve on the board of Twitter in their personal capacity. And like I said, there's no real incentive for them to do so, but other than the fact that they felt that they needed to go and really assist in terms of applying themselves to the position. So the board is formally constituted, Chair. We speak now, and I can confirm that the new members of the board have gone through a proper governance workshop where they were taken through all the rules in line with the Institute of Directors and came for corporate governance, you know, making sure that they understand their role and responsibilities. We have in the process also identified an independent chairperson. The current chairperson, interim chair of Twitter, will be the new chairperson of the board for now. So to the point of Mr. Nas raised about the competency and the board and the structures, we have chairperson, I think, covered that in details, and we're confident that the people will put it highly competent people, and like I said, we will be willing to share their CVs if it's required. Next point. Now, the matter of Twitter is a profitable business. I think Mr. Dennis makes a reference point to, it has not generated income, and the rationale for establishing Twitter. The council also reviewed the report in terms of that and in terms of the profitability of Twitter, and we decided that, you know, to make Twitter much more streamlined, so that it's easy to monitor, the performance of Tutor, and we can get a good clear sense in terms of whether what we're investing in is working or not. We decided to limit Tutor to two only operations. I think you see in the report, Mr. Dinas mentioned logistics and other stuff that we were there. We decided that we're going to scrap all of the stuff. Let's focus Tutor on two subsets that we believe as cancer has potential to generate income, which is TICE. TICE focuses on short course learning material. And I'm sure, Chairperson, you understand that short courses generally, there's a huge demand for that. I mean, just outside of the academic space, you know, what a University of Technology, there's a lot you could do within the space of cybersecurity, big data. So we do believe that TICE is an entity in terms of driving industry focus. Short courses could be in position to generate income. And of course, there's a net of Tutor properties in terms of properties as well, because it's a big portfolio in a university. And we do believe that if it's managed properly, it could render some potential returns for the university. So those are the two things that Tutor is going to be focusing on. So we have really stripped to a large extent, you know, all the other stuff that you believe were non-performance. I think we're focused to things that you can actually, each one of them is very straight to profit and loss statement. You can actually measure the performance of those type of things. And what we've done part of it is to make sure that we develop specific KPIs and time frames to say, look, we like Tutor to make sure that in the next 2 to 3 or 4 years, it's actually highly profitable for us. And part of the requirements, I'm going to speak about that, is that we are putting together a very stringent performance agreement between the Tutor boards and the council, so that this time around, we don't have a situation where none of us can see if Tutor is working or not working. So when the process of finalizing the performance agreement that will be signed by council and the incoming board of Tutor, like I said, chair, the incoming board has just been set up, it's just been established recently. As soon as we finalize the appointment of the chairperson, we will then engage them and sign a performance contract with the board in terms of making sure that they deliver on the mandate. And part of that is really also speaking to the issues of governance, you know, make sure that they maintain the highest standard of governance in terms of how to operate. And the council was very clear, we need to see some timelines in terms of when Tutor is going to start being profitable and shutting down some return to the university. So that's part of the equipment, a part of that. So where we are, we're finalizing that. The third thing that Mr. Sinas raised was the relationship between Tutor and the university. Again, we agreed with him. We said, look, yes, the relationship between the university and Tutor is too loose. We need to review that, and we need to make sure that we restructure. GMC took a decision to review most of the governance documents that govern Tutor and TET in terms of its performance. That included the MOI. We went through the MOI. I think we can share a copy of the latest copy where we actually amended some of the clause. We put some new clause there to make sure that the MOI is robust in terms of how it governs Tutor. Delegation of authority, again, we review that to make sure that the delegation of authority from a shareholder representative and the Tutor board is firmer and is quite rigid and focused. We also look at some of the things around the policies that the finance committee will have oversight in terms of some of the finances and some of the things that Tutor does, so that there's a direct dotted line between Tutor and the finance committee. We can able have a sight of all the finances of Tutor and what's happening. You know, we also agree that in terms of maintaining the streamline between Tutor and the TUT, that the direct communication be between the CEO of Tutor and the VC, so that we got one version of truth. We don't have too many people telling us different stories. So we believe that in terms of the relationship between Tutor and the university, we have streamlined those. We have put in some stringent controls. Over and above that, we have solicited support and expertise from the Institute of Directors to say they can help us in terms of how we bootstrap and how we beef up some of those governance matters. So that speaks to the issue that I think Mr. Tenas raised about the governance. So I've covered governance, I've covered skill sets. Next slide, please. Some of the very mentioned again, like I said, the issue of stakeholder, we agree. We fully agree with this report that there is a problem around stakeholder management at the university and Twitter. There's a lot of misunderstanding about Twitter. A lot of people don't understand what Twitter is supposed to be doing. There's a lot of misinterpretation of the minutes of Twitter. It's a problem, Chairperson. We agree. I'm the first one to put on record that we need to do more of that. And all of us, we concur. This is a new project. This is a new thing. It has never happened before. And it creates a lot of anxiety. It brings a lot of, mistrust from different people. And you're correct, Chairperson, we have different stakeholders, the students, the unions, and council. It's very important that we took everybody into confidence. It's very important that we engage extensively, become transparent. We have asked the new coming boards to make sure that they develop a comprehensive stakeholder relationship strategy where they really go out there and really tell people what Twitter is supposed to be doing. Really put the justification case for people so that everyone understands why Twitter exists and we deal with all the misconceptions and understanding. I must put in record here. One of the things I personally told Twitter has never set up to be a property business. And I think one of the things that gets misplaced in this whole conversation is that there's a couple cars or student accommodation. Twitter was set up in order to make sure how does a university optimize, some of its own strategic intellectual assets. One of the areas, for example, was the research area that we like to get to point where we drive research output and we start taking those things to the market. Another area was how we build a startup ecosystem for young graduate out there. So the mandate is quite broad when we started. So I think with those type of things, I think sometimes it gets lost in this presentation to say we need to make sure that we do a better job of explaining the mandate of Twitter, what Twitter is supposed to do. So we're testing you board to do that. And the second that we have tasked the board to do was to develop a very rigid performance contract with the management of Twitter, specifically the CEO, and with the reporting format. So that's so you sort of like have a cascading performance contract between the shareholder, which is the council, and the board of Twitter. And the board of Twitter has got a contract with the performance contract with the CEO, so that everybody is basically aligned. So we do expect that the new coming board will develop that specific performance contract and a specific KPIs with the CEO of Twitter. The issues around human resource that Mr. Penas raised are very concerned to us. I mean, we don't want to be associated with an entity that doesn't practice proper human resource protocol and procedures. We worried about if there are some accusations of nepotism, some people being double paid. It's a concern for us. And we have made it very clear that the new incoming board must look at the methods of resource management that Twitter implement contracts, remuneration policies, risk management. So we need basically them to review and come back to us as council and said, we have looked at all the implement contracts, we have looked at all the HR matters, and these align with corporate governance. There is no underhand things that are done, there are no bad practices. So we're tasking new board as part of the delivery that they need to look at the matters related to human resource, that they must make sure that we address all the matters that the assessor has raised, in terms of some irregularities in terms of appointment of people. The matter around the student accommodation related allegations and conflict of interest that assessor has raised. Again, Chairperson, we made it clear that board members had a duty, a fiduciary duty, to do what's in the best interest of the university, to do what's in the best interest of the company, to do what's in the best interest of the public good. We have tasked the new board their powers to put together some investigation to students that committed related letters, and if they must go to the market and appoint an independent person, they get the power to do so. But it's very important that these allegations are put to rest and we really deal with them in a decisive matter. All of these chairperson is things that we have put forward to the incoming board to deal with. And again, we've given timelines. The council would like to get a detailed report in terms of resolutions and resolvement of these matters within the next 3 months, so that when we do call for our next council meeting, these matters are presented to the council of the affair of GET, and we probably can even call a special council meeting if need to for the new board to come and present to us what they've done to address the matter that is put forward by the council as part of their duties. Next slide. Now, the matter of, I've mentioned the matter of debt revenue stream that, yes, we listened to Mr. Dennison raised the matter of tax implications. The P2I must pay tax. I think all of us if you're running a P2I campaign, you should pay tax. It's not a bad thing. In fact, you add to the cost of this cost of the country. If the company does everything by the book, does think compliant, profitable, you should pay tax. I think that's our view as a council. That I think an expression was given, I think, in our report. And Mr. Muzazo will expand more on that matter in terms of tax. But we follow the council, look, unless there's a valid reason that why Twitter as a P2I cannot pay tax, because it's the right thing to do. However, like I said, the CO2 will expand more in that matter. I have spoken to the matter of Twitter being a separate entity, a direct income, and I have to focus on the two areas that we've raised. The matter around the coordinating committee between Twitter and TT that Mr. Dina says, I concur. We fully agree with him that that process is a bit too loose. We need to restructure that whole relationship. We are currently tasked the independent expert from the international independent directors association to assist us with the matter so that we can put some stringent KPIs and KPIs for the relevant executives. So chairperson, we are working on a matter. We hope that by the time we finalize the exercise, we have a very, very comprehensive relationship management between the two entities. What we have done in the meantime, like I said, we have streamline the point of authority between the VC and the CEO and both of them that must account to the respective bodies. And in line to that, we also have put together a communication strategy where we've asked that there must be a formal communication strategy that we can drive in order to manage all the perception and miscommunications around Twitter and how Twitter is supposed to function in relation to the state stream income that is supposed to drive. And generally, all our state stream income approach initiative that we like to do, like to drive in the university. So we're talking a broader view that Twitter has provided us an opportunity to review this matter and really make sure that we are consistent in terms of how we manage communication around that. Next slide. One of the things that I think the sources are raised, Chairperson, which I fully agree and constantly agree that, you know, I think it's in the report that Twitter basically took what was internal processes around student accommodation and short courses and what is that Twitter supposed to be doing differently. We have made it here to that we like basically to explore innovative ways of generating income. You know, they must not just do what was done by the university, but really the incoming board is under pressure to come to us with creative, innovative ways of how they can improve income generating. So it's one of the things we have tasked the new board to do. We've also asked the new board to benchmark, you know, our approach in line with other universities. We have requested them to formally, not a desktop exercise, to formally go engage UCT, UP, VETS, UNISA, or other similar entities so that we can learn from other people what we are doing there and see if we're doing the right things or the wrong things. So that part of the report that will come back to the council will be a detailed investigation that will be done by the new board in terms of and we ask them that they should really, you know, physically exhaust themselves and really go out there and have real conversation with people and ask universities, we know different like instances, we should share knowledge, share best practices, and we should learn. So that will be part of the decision, that part of the activities that the new board will be doing, and hopefully that will also help us see, you know, correct some of the mistakes and make sure that what we're doing is not outside of the sector benchmarking in terms of how universities run the private entities. Like I've mentioned, now three issues, Chair, that I must put on record, that the issue of conflict of interest and lifestyle audit of certain individuals. One, on the report that the assessor presented to us, he did not indicate lifestyle audit for specific individuals. So I was quite surprised that he mentioned people's name in this public gathering, because there are legal issues around that. Council doesn't have a problem with that. We don't have a problem with people, but we do understand that people have a constitutional right, and we must respect that. We assume that there could be some legal matters around that, but from the record, Chair, we don't have a problem. I think the university, and we must get guidance how we deal with the legalities of these things, because if people tomorrow decide to sue us for demarcation, what do you call it, demarcation? That English word, definition of character. We don't want to be caught up in those type of things. So we open to be advised in terms of how best to do it. Yeah. But I think, like I said, we just need to be mindful of the legalities around that. So in closing, Chair, I think I have addressed some of the issues that were raised by the assessor and some of the recommendations that were made by CANSA. Just to add, to make sure that we didn't do this exercise just for the sake of it, we'll put some action date and timeline. That's so that we can able to see whether what we're doing, it's in line with the expectation ourselves, and we can monitor that and demonstrate our results that we want to meet up to be done. So going back from the time we started the process to where we are, you see the action date. So far, we stick to those action dates in terms of dealing with the matters. Moving forward, we have already, like I said, restructured Twitter. That was done on the 21st of January, where we restructured Twitter to three entities. We have structured the board as a council resolution. So most of the council resolution, we have implemented them. We have formally reconstituted the board on the 2nd of February. We have given the new board specific directive with a specific skill set. The members that we brought on board have corporate legal expertise, financial, corporate, the CAs, corporate property, metals, and business development. So most of the skill set that the assessor raised, we have addressed them in the new board that we put in place. The ESCO has approved the new board. The new board was presented to the council of the 19 and the GMC, the ESCO has approved the commission of GMC. We'll be presenting to the new board members to the next council meeting. We have formally circulated the newspapers in terms of recruitment and all the things that I've mentioned, Chairperson, we have done them in terms of the timelines. We've said that we brought some council members to deal some of the issues about regulating relationships between the university and Twitter. The outcome of that meeting was basically to get expertise in terms of putting together KPIs and performance indicators in place. One of the other things that we have done is to strengthen governance from a governance perspective. The Twitter has put together a governance framework policy that we'll be happy to share with the portfolio committee that in a detailed manner covers all the government aspects that Twitter needs to adhere to, that is in place. We put together a board charter that I think Mr. Dennis Reza doesn't exist, it formally exists now, which will cover the role and expectations and the functions of the board members and the management team. We have tasked the registrar and the vice chancellor to draft detail with the assistance from legal expertise and external business people, a performance contract between the university and the board of tutors, so that we can measure their performance, we can make sure that in future, you know, we don't have weak governances between the two structures, and we're hoping that the process chapter scene will be formalized fairly quickly, and that contract will deal some of the issues that we raised here in terms of the performance of tutors. At the heart of it will be performance around profitability, governance, and really running to the best ethical manner as any entities are required, because mindful as a university, we have to uphold all standards of ethical behavior. Part two to that, the new board also has been requested to draft a detailed performance contract between itself and the CEO, including frequency of reporting, type of reporting that you want to see, making sure that there's transparency between the board, the CEO, and the council in terms of metabolism to tell. I've covered some of the things like that. All of the things that Chaperson, we have said the presentation, those are things that the new board is expected to deliver on. And all of these things have been reported to the council. We got a council meeting in July where we'll give updates in terms of the status of all things that we've asked the new board to do. So we're hopeful by that time all of these things will be put in place so that we can give council members and our stakeholders a comfort. That we have managed to put all the governance metrics that speak specifically some of the issues that the assessor report has raised. I think I've covered the issues around the allegations that we have tasked the board. The board needs to come back to us with a definite date where they can report to us in terms of their findings related to management of student accommodation, employment, health, and conflict interest. We are expecting a report back from the coming board because it's a new item for them to deal with. As far as the council, in terms of the issue around the appointment of a board, that has been done, that has been rectified, and we have brought in an independent expert to assist us in terms of putting better, you know, controls around the relationship agreement. We're hoping to conclude that exercise very soon. I think it's been action, so we should have a detailed report soon in terms of that. Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, thank you very much. That concludes my section of the report. What I'm going to do, I'm going to request Mr. Mutsatsi to deal specifically with some of the operational matters that speak to his area, and I'm going to pass it to Ms. Mutsatsi. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you for the report. The CEO, Mr. Mutsatsi, are you on the platform?
I am here, thank you.
Okay. You can ask me to provide some more details. I don't know how much time are you going to have.
I beg your pardon, Chair.
I was asking how much time you have.
Chair, we, in terms of the brief that we received earlier, we were asked to give a detailed report on the operational matters, which we didn't submit to the committee. We had, as a contingency, planned a report on the to summarize Tutor's report or response to the independent assessor's report. So in the circumstances, especially because we have started the meeting with the discussions on the independent assessor's report. I will start with that part. I will try and deal with it with as much specificity as possible, but at the same time trying to conserve time. But so say, Chair, I'm in your hands. I can present the two reports. In fact, there are three reports essentially that arise out of this. It's the response to the independent assessor's report. It is the detailed operational matters. We were also requested to put together a PowerPoint presentation based on the annual financial statement of today. So I've got those three reports. I'll be guided by the Chair in terms of the time that is available. On a lighter note, Chair, it is possible to fill the time until 1 o'clock, but I don't believe it is the intention of the Chair for us to do that.
Okay. I'm trying to manage the time. Maybe what you should do is focus on the issues that are in the independent assessor's report. Maybe just deal with that. The financials, we have received them. I don't think we need to take us through that. Maybe we can summarize the financials in about 2 or 3 minutes. What I think we will be interested in is the response to the independent assessor's report. So I'm not sure if we can do that in a... You think 20 minutes is enough for 30 minutes?
Chair, yes, at the least 30 minutes.
Okay, 30 minutes. I think the chair has sort of attended to all the issues, governance issues that are raised around the model for the entity and all of that. So I think that ground has been largely covered by the Chair. So if there are detailed issues that you need to talk to, you can do that. So, yeah, let's try and do it
in
30 minutes.
In 30 minutes, Chair?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we'll try and adhere to that. In fact, we will adhere to that. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I think we wish to appreciate the invitation by the portfolio committee to present this report. We had a structure in the team that would present different parts, but to save time, I will take the committee through all the reports. We can move to the next slide. Chair, just also the way of an introduction is that Mr. Magnoni, the Chair of the Council, has mentioned the strengthened board of TDS as a 2K insider. I deliberately used the word strengthened board because it had been the desire and the request of the tutor board that it needed some strengthening in certain areas. In fact, the board had gone to a great extent to identify the skill set that it required in order to strengthen the board. And notwithstanding all the concerns that have been expressed, the board that was set up by the university at the beginning had done a good work of directing Tute to the point of the handover to this newly strengthened board. The board consists of Ms. Nonsantla Giani, who up until now is been acting as the independent chair, but she's also an independent non-executive director. Chair, I think for purposes of clarity, when we talk about the board, there's a distinction generally that's made between the executive directors, who are people that are employed by the company, but also serving as directors, the non-executive directors, who are people that are somehow associated with the company, but are not executives, are not working within the company. And the independent non-executive directors, we are people that have got no other association or affiliation with the company except being on the board. So Gianni is one of those independent non-executive directors. And we have Her Royal Highness, Tinan Damase, Queen Damase, who's an independent non-executive director, Ms. Yolisa Ngabase, who's also an independent non-executive director, which means she's not on the council of TUT, and Mr. Suresh Maharaj, who's the independent non-executive director. These are the four independent non-executive directors of the board. And then we have Mr. Tendo Rachitanga, who's a non-executive director. He is on the council of TUT. And Ms. Zandile Kabine, who is also a non-executive director as well as advocate. And Ntombizodwa Guta, who's a non-executive director, and as well as myself as executive director. Chair, in responding to the report of the independent assessor, I wish to start with some context and some critical considerations, which we believe that the report overlooks or has underplayed advertently or inadvertently. That we do not have a comment on that, but we should believe are important. At the time of the assessment of that was done, Tute had just turned two. It was just after its second anniversary, having been established in February 2018, started operating in March 2018, and the assessment actually commenced in April 2020. If you look at that timeline, the company was just over 2 years old. Now, what is important is that the report treats this as anecdotal, and it is not. Actually, it is a fairly central theme that needed to be pulled in as a source of benchmark, as a source of analysis, and even as a source of interpretation. Because it is central to the assessment of any company. When you talk about a company, one of the things you look at is how long has it been in operation? Because it's against that you can judge its level of maturity. And throughout the report, one of the themes that emerge, or if one reads between the lines, is the aspect of not taking that into consideration. So because of that, the majority, in fact, any company, when you measure it against its age, majority of systems and processes come into place. When you look at are the following processes in place, that also goes with the maturity of the company. A two-year-old company will be different from a five-year-old company, from a 10-year-old company, and for a 20-year-old company. The policies formulation and implementation, in most cases, you will find that policy formulation is a work in progress in a company that is still in its infancy. The return on investment or shareholder expectations, that also is highly affected and defined by the maturity level and the age of the company, as well as the selection and availability of benchmarks. You don't benchmark or compare a two-year company with a 20-year company, as an example. So we believe that it's been an oversight on the part of the report in treating the age of the company as anecdotal, as opposed to being central to the assessment. There's also the issue of the marginalized board, Chair, that the board is generally not individuals. It is a group of people. It works as a unit, a unit that is made up of individuals. And in the process, the board was not approached, was not consulted, was not quizzed. individual members of the board, past members, some of them were no longer part of the board, some of them current members of the board, were approved. We believe that there should have been a perspective of the board that should have been solicited. There was clear evidence that the board was functional and fulfilling its role. I think it is a fact that we cannot easily wish away. There were all scheduled meetings were held in both the formative year or the inaugural year of 2019, as well as the first quarter of 2020, which was the assessment period. All meetings were correct. There was only one short notice special meeting. In other words, a special meeting that was set up at short notice, which could not correct in 2019, as well as the board agendas and approval were according to annual work plan on both years. So there was a functioning company with a functioning board. The other aspect that I would believe that has not received due consideration, and the chair of council touched on it, is that GT has invested substantially into a share capital of 20 million, or over 20 million, say 21 million, and a shareholders loan of 6.5 million. The write-off will translate to fruitless expenditure. So if one cannot handle the issue of the continuing operations of lightly, because you are likely to trigger a fruitless expenditure item for the university. The reintegration into TUT will necessitate investment and loan write-off, in other words, the write-off of that, and the lack of rational basis for reintegration into TUT. The chair has covered that, so I will not overemphasize that point. Also, Chair, just to give an overview, we can move to the next slide. Yoko, thank you very much. There were some shortcomings, we believe, in terms of the report, which it completely overlooked the relationship agreement, which is a critical constitutive document. Now, if you work through the relationship agreement, some of the points that lacked clarity as per the report would have found clarity in that document. Also, failure to consider relevant and material evidence. In fact, it is the admission of the assessment that there were no other, or there were areas where there was no access to relevant documents. So from a purely legal as well as from a professional point of view, professionals often don't make an opinion when they do not have the full information, and I think that is important. Also, we know that there was no review of the transcripts of the PPC-PAT engagements, and we believe that there was some information that was important in terms of those transcripts, as well as as not intervening the auditor and COSEC, and Mr. Jellison made a point that they did not get or the auditors and the company secretary were not available. I have several times checked and rechecked with them. In terms of the company secretary, they were available. They got one request, and that request was coupled with the request for information, which was, in fact, I have an email that I could display, which shows how the request was put. And there was never a follow-up to say, now that we've got the information we're asking for, we need the interview to take place. So there was no reluctance on the side of the auditors, which is PwC, who are quite familiar with assessments and investigations and audits, as well as the company secretary, which is a reputable company, Louis Rock. I think the other shortcoming is the superficial treatment of taxation as a fundamental reason for reintegration, for making the recommendation for reintegration. And I'll come back to that in some detail in a few minutes. Overlooking the stage of development and maturity curve, we've spoken about that earlier. And I think what's also important is the non-technical and shallow analysis of Tutia's business model. I think that's an important shortcoming in the report. There's lack of comparative analysis, for an example, of the historical passive income in TUT compared to Tutia's projected performance. Because it's such a new company, you couldn't do a historical track record of Tutia. You can't take 1 year's performance of an inaugural year and make that work on that. But we've got to look at what is projected and based on that do a comparative analysis with the TT's history in terms of third stream income. That would have been, I believe, a very important instructive analysis to council and to this committee. There was no benchmarking with comparable businesses locally and globally. And I do not believe that there's any reason why the assessing or the assessment team could not access any of the universities, etc. In fact, some of the information, quite frankly, is also available even at a desktop level. And the chair referred to the analysis of benchmarking being done at desktop level, but even at desktop level, there's still limitations in terms of how incisive that benchmarking exercise has been. So the implications of the shortcomings, Chair, is that the report is not really based on factual findings, but largely on untested hearsay. There are weak links between process method or methodology that was proposed, the findings and the recommendations. The assessors demonstrate the lack of access to documents, which some of them did not ask for. For example, board meeting packs, and even just this morning I went through the different emails that were requesting the information, and they were consistently requesting for the minute of the meeting, as well as the personnel files. Personnel files were not requested. Some information regarding personnel was requested. So I think it is important that the methodology, I think, as was set up at the findings and recommendation, there's a weak link there. So we believe that the report can therefore not be relied on from our perspective. Okay, I will deal with the findings specifically. I'm not going to go into every finding. I will highlight the important ones and on some I will not even go through the presentation. I will just make general remarks so that I observe the chair's time. The first finding in the report deals with the rationale for the establishment of Tutia. And the first point that deals with Tutia's corporate structure. So we believe that the steering committee of the business development unit spent quite a lot of time, including holding workshops as well as discussions, which sufficiently ventilated the reasons for a separate legal entity in its submissions to council. So there's a body of work that was done, that was substantial, that led to the thinking and the rationale, which ultimately led to the submissions to council, manifesting in the form of the third stream income policy, the business model, as well as the business case. These were manifestations of a process that was undertaken by the business development unit steering committee. So, and some of those reasons, and these are just some of the reasons that at that stage were articulated, the incompatibility of university mandate, focus and competencies in relation to developing and running scalable and repeatable business activities. And I think the emphasis should be, it's not just running any business. TUT Enterprise Holdings was set up to run scalable, repeatable, and agile business activities which can grow. If you have got to meet the third stream income, and Chair, to put it in context, the benchmark or best practice around third stream income generation is that universities that are very successful in that and universities that are able to achieve to levels of 30% of the operating expenditure budget of the university being generated through the third stream income. If you take 30% of TUT's current budget, and I speak under correction, but I think it's just over 4 billion rands. The 2021 budget. If you take that number and you say your target is 30% of that number, you realize that you cannot run. A small business. You run a business that has a potential for scalability, repeatability, and growth. So if you're going to run that, then it becomes difficult that you can run those two institutions under one umbrella. It becomes a separate arm of the university. It cannot be run within a department. It cannot be run within a unit. The scale talks to that. And also, at that stage, we recognize the limitations imposed by statutes, rules, and structure of the university. And the nature of procurement processes. And also, it was the vehicle to promote true collaboration with private sector, where we can enter into joint ventures, joint shareholding, et cetera, et cetera. As well as the local and international benchmark. So TUT was not unique in doing this, and the chair has referred to that. So the assets are failed to undertake any meaningful benchmarking as well, which is an important observation. Most universities have registered privately held limited liability companies, contrary to what's in the report that says, and it's not in a definitive way, but says that it seems that most universities are not doing it. Actually, in South Africa, the only university that I'm aware of that is actually reversing the process is the University of the Northwest in some of the areas. All the other universities in the country have in one form or the other a PTY, LTD in it. And this is not only unique to South Africa, it's a global phenomenon. The technology transfer offices are not exceptions, but the norm as part of the third-stream income mix of universities. So the achievements of the TTOs and their registration is actually part of that. The taxation treatment of the TT versus the P2LTD, this is an important part because a lot is made to turn on it, so I refer to it in a few slides, even as we go forward here. But I think what is important is that the statement is quite superficial to the extreme, and also tends to demonize taxation. And the chair of council also mentioned that I think as an institution, TUT does not, see a difficulty in that, as long as the business that we do makes sense and all the other pieces, hold together. The assessor's report does not provide relevant references in either the Tax Administration Act or the Income Tax Act, which are the relevant pieces of legislation in this regard. There is no evidence of blanket exemption on taxation regardless of the nature of the activities that it engages in. So if you look at the tax, there are exemptions for universities, but it's not blanket exemptions. There are conditions linked to that. So the assessor's report ignores the trade-offs that the university would have to make, even if it were true, and it's not that the university would enjoy the blanket exemption. There are, however, some trade-offs as well in terms of why it is important to be independent. TUTE has commissioned, as we speak, a detailed report on the tax treatment of its current main revenue stream, which is student accommodation. And actually, the report will be tabled at the meeting of the board of directors now in June, because we've gone deeper in terms of understanding, wanting to understand. understand those tax implications. The findings three, as I said, Chair, I will not go through every finding. I'll go on the highlight. The Twitter's business model. So from the onset, the business model of Twitter envisaged multiple income streams rolled out over a period of 5 years. That was from the onset. So this information was shared several times with the independent assessors. So the statement that Twitter was not innovative in terms of, or was only focused on what the university had traditionally been doing, was against the backdrop that there was a roadmap in terms of business development within Twitter. A deliberate decision was taken to start with the student accommodation and SLPs in order to provide the necessary cash flows for the development of other streams. And the chair mentioned earlier that Tute was not set up as a property company or even a student accommodation company. It was set, that is why in the name it says TT Enterprise Holdings. But it was a deliberate strategic move to ensure that it creates a base from the known to the unknown. And it's also important, and I'll touch on the point maybe in a few bullets down the line. At the time of the assessment, it was only a year since Tute had started managing student accommodation as well as SLPs. Just a year, Chair, in 2019. Tute's involvement in legacy businesses, which is, you know, student accommodation, short learning programs, etc., is premised on introducing repeatability, scalability, as well as agility. And we mentioned those earlier. And this is a very important principle, Chair, that often when people do not fully understand business, they will say, you know, you're doing what somebody else is doing. And that's the nature of business. I can come to my neighbor who's got a spaza shop and set up a supermarket, sell exactly the same stuff that they're selling, but at a bigger scale. It's a different business. Once you can introduce scale, once you can introduce repeatability, that's what it is. And I think that's an important oversight or mission in the criticism that Twitter has done what has been done within the university. I think the question should be asked, are you able to scale it? Are you having plans for scaling? Are you having this to make sure that it happens as frequently as it's required? So these are the three critical ingredients in enterprise development, which are not the competence of academic institutions. This has to be done by a dedicated team with the right skills. And I think at this point here, I need to allude also to the question of skills that was mentioned earlier, that the management of today is made up of the right skills. The board of Tute at the time was comprised of the right skills, because even members of council that were on the board were not full-time employees. Members of council were business. Some of them were exposed to business, either in the corporate sector or in their own businesses, but they had a fair amount of exposure to business. So to have a blanket criticism that because somebody sits on the council of the university and therefore has no business skill, I think it's an unfair criticism, even to the persons that were involved. The innovative revenue generation does not equate novel revenue streams. Innovation can come. One of the largest companies that are known for innovation in the country at the moment, in the world, is Apple. Apple has taken what had been there, innovated and improved on it, and it's still an innovative company. The novel revenue streams are likely to be more high risk and capital intensive, and that is why strategically, TUT Enterprise Holdings started with revenue streams where we could innovate, but where revenue streams that were indigenous or inherent to the university. it is actually fallacious to think that a university-linked company should go and run a business that has got nothing to do with the university. It doesn't happen anywhere in the world. It doesn't happen in this country. It doesn't happen, and I don't think it will make sense to do it that way. So what is important is that GT has introduced significant innovation in student accommodation, and is in the process of doing so with the SLP delivery. But in student accommodation, Chair, a problem that had been with the university for many, many years was resolved in 1 year. It used to be known. Even the media used to camp here beginning of the year, because they know that there will be queues for student accommodation and there will be drama because students will have to go on strike because they cannot find accommodation. There were countless stories of students, young women, that were abused because they were struggling for accommodation, and some of them would have to go and overnight in other places just so that they can again make it to the queue the following day. That problem was obliterated literally in 1 year. We are in 2020 intake as well as 2021 intake. We haven't had that problem. We have had a significant increase in the number of beds. We have had a significant increase in the quality of beds. And we have a significant increase in the level of landlord engagement, which has never happened before. So it is fallacious to the extreme to say that there is no innovation in that space. Again, on the taxation, the tax treatment of maximum income in universities cannot simply be applied on a blanket basis, as I said earlier, because it ignores a critical tax principle, and that's the principle of intention. At the heart of tax and tax analysis is the principle of intention. And I'm just quoting here two writers who collaborated in an article in 2018, Snacker and Gama, who said the receipts and accruals of a university of which the principal object is the conducting of scientific, technical, or industrial research which are approved by SARS. Now, that's an operative word, approved by SARS, and comply with the requirements of Section 10(1) and C, are exempt from income tax. Tax exemptions are not limited to income tax. Pension funds, PBOs, and universities may also qualify for an exemption from donations tax, dividends tax, and capital gains tax, or levy in terms of the income tax. However, unfortunately, that's slightly different. So, we are simply illustrating the complexity and the need to be a bit more analytical when we talk about the tax effect and tax considerations. The findings here, and I'll conclude with this one, from the employment practices at TUTE. The comment is not reflective of the stage of development of the company or startup. And this is where it's important. So when you talk to anybody that is an entrepreneur that has started a business from the scratch, a new business, they will tell you that the first focus is to build a founding team, which is a team of people that are handpicked to build that startup. It is a team of people that have been identified and have been picked to build that startup. It is a practice that, if you look at in retrospect, many years after the company has been started, people can bemoan it, people can cry that practice, but it's a practice that is happening, you know, all the time. Each Enterprise Holdings, when it started, there was a need to build that startup team and develop that founding team. That is the team that needed to be in place so that the policies and the other mechanisms of good corporate governance can be put in place and can be made to work in a practical way. And it was the fastest and the quickest way from point zero to revenue. and therefore there was definitely a recruitment of people initially to build the founding team, and following that, once the key personnel were identified, they made contributions as well, so that we can move to where we are today. Currently, there are employment and personnel policies, there are recruitment processes benchmarked, the remuneration and all other areas benchmarked. I also just want to make broad comments also around the point that was made with regard to the lifestyle and the lifestyle. And the chair has touched on that. It is of great concern, and wherever at today where we are aware of any malfeasance, of any wrongdoing, we are always very keen to get involved in resolving those issues. We do not overlook that. What we have not had has been beyond just the fact that somebody said, you know, there's a problem there. There hasn't been any demonstration of any wrongdoing. The expenditure of Tute has been available for scrutiny. It's been audited. There hasn't been any of the money that has been utilized or used by individuals, etc. However, the board of Tute, the new board, this is one of the items that it's dealing with. It's one of the items that will consistently pursue until we get to the bottom of understanding any malfeasance in terms of student accommodation, also in terms of if there's any requirement that individuals should be in their capacity to get. Having said that, Chair, it is important to reiterate, and I only reiterate it because of its level of importance, to reiterate what the Chair said, that we need to do this in a legal way. It is a fact that even in the way that some of the information that is in the report has reached that point, opens both Tute and TUT to legal challenge, and we do not want to find ourselves in that space. But there is a clear commitment to deal with any malfeasance. Chair, I think I've 5 minutes gone beyond your time, and I apologize for that, and I will end this presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. For the presentation, we are left with about four presentations. There is the presentation on suspensions and disability, and there is one on project. I'm going to ask that if we're able to finish it
for like half an hour,
or say half past 11, that we have got another 30 minutes of dealing with the two outstanding presentations. Can you please ask that those who are ignored? I've already indicated that this is not a public meeting. It's a normal meeting of the parliament. And if you are not a parliamentarian, you have been asked to come and address this committee. Please don't raise your hand. Allow members of parliament to raise their hands and to interact with the report. Even them, the members who are here, knows that at what point are they supposed to raise their hands. For now, we are receiving presentations. Let's allow that the presentations be made. so that at the end of them we can engage with the presentation. The last time we were here, we were worried that the presentation were not sufficient, the responses and so forth. So if we get long presentation, I think we must just bear with the university, because this is what we asked for and this is what we are getting now. We will engage with them at an appropriate time. I suppose it's the Vice Chancellor who's going to take us through the two issues. Let me hand over to you, Prof.
Good morning, Chairperson, and to also the portfolio members. Chair, I will deal with the disciplinary cases, and our Deputy Vice Chancellor Operations will deal with the infrastructure issues, Chair. My report will be very short, Chair. There are currently no suspensions and disciplinary cases against DUT senior management. So all of that has been covered. The last arbitration process was resolved on the 23rd of March 2021 when the university concluded an agreement of mutual separation with Dr. R.E. Moraka, Chair, the former Deputy Vice Chancellor, Student Affairs and Extracurricular Development, Chair. This is the report, Chair. I will, with your permission, ask that Dr. Khatu Tlale do the presentation on the infrastructure projects, Chairperson.
Okay. Who is it, Professor?
He is Dr. Khatu Tlale, a Chairperson, a professional engineer.
Okay.
And a professor at the university, extraordinary professor in mechanical engineering, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Over to you. Please just be considerate of time.
Thanks, Chair. Morning to you and morning to the committee. Chair, I'll take you through the recovery project at our different campuses. Next slide, thanks. Chair, as per the brief, the committee wanted to know the update on the recovery project, and the committee required specific information with respect to delayed infrastructure projects, and that includes variation orders, analysis of initial project cost versus revised or amended or varied cost, and projected the date of completion. So we've provided that information for all the projects. Just as a background, Chair and the committee, the recovery program started in 2018 and it consisted of 11 projects at seven campuses, and currently we've completed three projects, six are under construction and the two are under procurement. There were various problems with this project, so that's why we call them recovery projects. Some of the reasons were non-performing contractors, non-performing professional team, internal poor project or contract management, and delayed start of construction. Next slide, thanks. So Chair, let's start with the Kharankua campus project. It will be three projects: completion of the auditorium, completion of specialist lecture centers, and construction of new residence. With respect to Kharankua, the campus auditorium, completion of the auditorium, there we had a problem with the contractor that was not performing. The contractor was terminated, and the project went under recovery. Parallel to that, there's a process to recover some of the funds that the contractor owes to the university, and because of poor workmanship, because what we experienced today was poor workmanship with regards to structural issues. That's why you'll see that the added cost for recovery for this project is 54 million, while the original projected cost is 88.7 million. When the contract went on recovery, we'd already spent 85.6 million. In terms of the variation orders, the details are given there. So we have variation orders on professional fees for electrical engineer, appointment of occupational health safety officer, COVID compliance, and so on. The major variation, the major cost for variation order came from the ICT scope of work. So when the project was conceptualized, it didn't include the ICT scope of work. Okay, what you can see from the previous one, what you can see from there is the progress on site. This is a picture that was taken a month back. Next one. Then with respect to the Kharankua Specialized Lecture Theatres, this project, as well, Chair, we had a problem with the contractor. Due to the contractor not meeting the contractual obligations, as well, there's a parallel process to try and recover the funds that the contractor owes to the university. We finalized the process of appointing a new contractor for this contract. It will start, the construction process will start this month. In terms of Kharankua new residence, with this one, Chair, the contractor is still the initial contractor. For this one, we had one major variation order on the foundation. When the foundation was done, it was found that from the geotech study that the soil there was mostly clay, so we had to import G7 material in order to stabilize the foundations. Progress is ongoing, and with this contractor, Chair, I think progress is very slow, and we're considering some additional actions on this project. What you see there is the progress on site. It's supposed to be a five-story building. We currently on the third story. Story. We left with two more stories. So going to Soshanguve South Campus projects, there's two projects, Soshanguve 200-bed residence and construction of new Soshanguve 100-bed residence. For Soshanguve 200-bed residence, on this project as well, we had a problem with a contractor performing. The project was completed with that contractor that was not performing. The contractor did not so good work, and we found ourselves with a project that's completed, but we had to do remedial works because of the quality of work that was not up to scratch from the contractor. There was a forensic investigation that was done regarding this project, and necessary corrective actions have been taken internally by TUT regarding this project. So what you see, the original project cost was 63 million, previously spent is 62. The cost to fix the building, that's complete in brackets, it's 42 million. With this project, we finalized the appointment of the contractor to go and do the remedial work for this one. And there's no variation orders. We anticipate the project will go on construction this month as well. For the Soshanguve 100 new bed residents, construction started late last year, and when we were busy with the construction, we discovered the sinkhole. Geotech was done, but it didn't detect that there was a sinkhole there. So the variation order for this one was because of to fix that sinkhole. And the variation order, the details of the variation order are there. Progress is okay for this one because it's a new project. Then, Chair, we move to the Soshanguve North Campus project. We've got only one project there that's under recovery, which is the new multi-purpose building for teacher training. With this project as well, we had a problem with the contractor. The contractor couldn't meet the contractual obligation, so they were terminated. The original project cost around 80 million, and when we went on termination, it was around 66 million. And to recover the project, we're going to spend about, let's say, 55 million. On the date when we prepared this presentation, there were no variation orders. But for this project, there'll be some variation orders that are coming because of the work on site was stopped by the community. When that happens, then the contractor will file for spending time. So there's some variation orders mainly due to spending time of the contractor because the community interfered or stopped the work there. That's just the progress on site. The next step is just to put the roofs over there, and from there we will start with the finishing. The next project is Pretoria Arts Campus project. So there's two projects, the perimeter fence project and the health and wellness center. So with the perimeter fence project, it's completed. We didn't have any variation orders on this project. The project started off, the initial cost is around 11 million, and we didn't have to allocate funds to recover this project. Actually, on this project, we made some savings because the amount that was spent on this project is around 5 million. The next project, health and wellness center. For this project as well, it's in construction. Construction is going very well. We hope to complete this project in 2 months' time. The original project cost around 9.6 million, and we didn't have to allocate any funds to recover this project. And we didn't have any variation orders for this project as well. So that's the latest picture of the health and wellness center. There, as you can see, it's almost complete. They're busy with the electrical works and the ICT works and fire suppression systems for that project. The next project is in Emalahleni. It's the construction. It's only one project, the construction of the 200-bed residence. So this project as well, the contractor for this one is still the original contractor. The project started early last year. The original project cost 93.6 million. The money that we've spent so far on this project is around 32 million. We have some variation orders on this project, the main cost for the variation orders, the first one is the increase of cost due to the passage of time, because your construction input materials go up, and the second cost driver for variation orders was the scope for electrical works. Because of the passage of time, when we were redoing the budget, and electrical contractor indicated that they would not be able to complete the electrical works with the budget that they submitted in 2017. So because of the increase in copper price, the electrical works moved from 5.5 million to around 8.1 million. Those are the latest pictures on site as well. This is a five-story building. We had the third story. We left with two more stories and putting the masonry walls and finishing the building. This building will be completed late next year. The other project is in the Mbombela campus. We have one project there, which is the alterations and additions to existing library and administration building. With this one, the project is completed. We had to terminate the contract as well because of non-performance. The original project scope is 20 million. When we terminated at around 12.8 million, and the added cost to recover the cost was 16.6 million. We don't have any variation orders on this one. Those are the latest pictures from the project. As I said, it's a completed project. The last project is Pretoria West Campus entrance gate. For this project, it's a completed project. The original budget for this project was 23 million. We've spent almost 22 million. We don't have currently recovery cost on this project. That has been approved. There's ones that the contractor have put in, but because we are in dispute with the contractor, we haven't approved the variation order. So the details of the variation order are there at the bottom. You can see it's cladding of the gate, turnstiles, spike barriers, and so on. That's the last project, Chair and the committee. And with that, I'd like to thank you. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation on the project. I think we are done with all the presentations. I am going to open for members to engage, but I think I must make a point that the kind of responses that we are getting now from the university. It's much more comprehensive. It's unlike the last time when we met, where the university council was saying, we've noted, we are dealing with it. So, for instance, we're not sure as to how the university is dealing with the report of the independent assessor. But now at least we are having a sense of what are the actions and the steps that the university council is taking to deal with the matters. Because when the report like that one is issued, especially if it is commissioned by the university council, there must be a demonstration that the council takes the report seriously. Where they agree with it, they must say we agree here. Where there are issues raised, the council must attend to the issues. I think members will engage with the report, but at least we are having a sense of what the university is saying. This is what we are going to do. We have reconstituted the council, we have made sure that they are independent, non-executive members of the board. We are referring some letters to the board to deal with. We disagree with the report of the independent assessor around the model. We think that the model is proper. So we may also ourselves disagree with council, but at least council is having a stance that this is our stance. This is the motivation why we think that an independent entity is required. Issues that are raised, we are referring them to council. Council must look to the board. The board must look at it. The board must come back and report to us in July. So I think at least from that perspective, there is an indication that the council is taking that report seriously, because it was commissioned by council. Of course, at our request, so letters which are raised there, they are being attended to. I must say that I'm a bit worried about a lot of variations that have been made to the project. There might well be reasons for that, but when you appoint a professional team to do the designs of the project, you factor in some of the unforeseen things that might happen in a project. And you make provision for that. I don't know what is it called. I think it is called contingencies. So which is provision that is made for unforeseen things that might happen in a project. But the amount of variation orders, they are very worrying, as presented by the report. And I'm not sure what the members will say, but I think it's a matter that the university might be requested to go and attend to it, because it is worrying. We don't know whether there's been some action to verify whether those variations are actual work that needed to be done, or whatever the case might be. But I think I must thank the university leadership for presentations. This time it was quite detailed. I saw Honorable Lucia's hand. I'm seeing Honorable Boshoff's hand. Honorable Mananiso. Okay, in that order, Honorable Lucia is gone. Honorable Boshoff?
Don't take care of it, no.
Oh, thank you. Honorable Mananis.
Oi. You just leave it, Jay, anyway.
Okay, Honorable Boshoff?
Oh, thank you, Jay. Sorry, I thought we were going to go with Honorable
Let's hear.
But it came back, so it will come after you. Don't worry.
Thank you, Chair. I was I listened closely to the whole idea of the separate entity as a separate company in opposition to a unit within the university. And it seems to me the big argument there is that the scale makes it imperative to work in a separate company. Now, I'm not quite, sure that convinced that's what I was looking for. I'm not quite convinced because if one looks at the different university campuses, then we have a huge scale, but it never is sufficient reason to say, okay, let's divide the university into different universities or whatever. It's just regarded as different units. Although the scale is very is indeed very big and or very large, the whole idea that you have a different company, this enterprise, which has to be audited on its own and which has to pay taxes on its own, I just want to refer to the idea of the taxes also, that indeed, if it is possible to get some deductions, one should not see it as an anti-tax notion to try to pay as little tax as is possible, because that which you invest in other ways which makes it possible to avoid some tax actually does some of the work which the tax man otherwise has to finance. So the whole idea of third stream income seems to me to be something which universities actually do not do. Now, I followed the argument that, okay, universities do supply accommodation, but this is done in another way in order to finance something else. But they could get no idea of what that something else is, what should be financed by the accommodation on the long run. It would seem to me that something at the technical University of Technology, like a manufacturing facility or something which is actually not quite the business of a university, but the knowledge base which exists within the university makes it a very credible venture for the university to enter into. Make it convincing for me to say, okay, but now we need quite a distinct institution, although the only shareholder is the TUT, but it has another, its own board and its own everything. So maybe if I could just boil it down to a simple question is, okay, let's say the accommodation which universities actually do is structured within TUT in order to generate income, in order to do something else. What is the something else? Thank you, Jay.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Borsho. Honorable Izia.
Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry about that. My network decided to play bubbles. I will just open my video for all the I tried to open a video, but my network is a little bit because my video is poor. So.
Don't open the video, just continue with your questions.
Yeah. So that they know it's me, Chair. They don't think it's somebody else. I'll just close it now, and then I'll go straight to my comment. I've got many of them, Chair. One, I'll start with the assessor. Welcome the reports. Welcome the comprehensive responses from the University Council and also to TF, and also the report of the independent assessor. My question, I've read the 100 and something page SSS report, Chair, I think twice now. And also I went through the presentation that he gave us today. I think I'll go straight to the question. I think one thing that is clear is that he was appointed on the 1st of April 2020, and he completed his job on the 19th of June 2020, which is exactly 80 days. So his job was done in 80 days. Now the question to him is, what was the terms of reference his appointment? What was he appointed for? I'm asking this, Chair, because I think at a later stage he may have went over the terms of reference. That is why I'm asking, and I'm saying may, because I want him to confirm the terms of reference too. he also says that there is no logical basis for 210 to operate as a separate entity outside of the university. Maybe if you can just take us through what he means by that. Did he compare this with other universities, or it was just a stillborn company? He just compared a stillborn company called Tute to its own, or his scope was he also looked at other universities, Chairperson. I'm on a page here, and I have four, you know, University of Pretoria has got four third stream companies, private, which are registered as PTY LTD. I will not name them, but there are here four of them, and I'm just opening one on my phone. I just opened one of those, which is University of Pretoria. So is he saying that Tute operates is the new invention in the university space or not? So he says there's no logical basis. Maybe if he can just take us through why he says so, because other universities are doing it and they're doing it good. Or maybe he went to those universities and those companies in those universities within 2 years, they would have generated some income, or they took 3, 4, 5 years before they could generate some income. I just want to understand why he makes such a point. The other point is that he says third stream income should be run by people with business or commercial skills, while he on the above he says that two tests should be in-house. You know, so I'm a little bit confused of what he's proposing there, Chair, because he says those ones should be business people. I heard the CEO, I think, responding to him. Chair, I don't want to respond, but I just, you know, I think I'm left confused by that, because the point before that he speaks about Twitter being an in-house, thing. Well,
Chair, if you're confused by what? Sorry, man, I missed that point there.
No, I'm confused by this point he makes, that a third stream income should be run by people with business or commercial skills. That is his point three, I think, point two in the slides. Whereas a point before that he said there's no logical basis for Tute to be run as a private entity. You know, so he says that should be in house, and then he then says on the following point that it must be people with business or commercial skills. So that is confusing, you know. But it says also, Chair, there are conflict of interest. Which stakeholders are this? It says there are conflict of interest, and we heard this from stakeholders. So maybe if you can just take us to which stakeholders are this, and how did he arrive at that? And then point two, on the recruitment and remuneration of two members that he mentioned. And I'm going to mention them. I know the chair of council raised a concern about it, but I think I must just inform the chair that there's no one who will take this meeting to court, chair, because they are meetings of parliament are protected by the powers and powers and privileges. Therefore, even if names are mentioned there, no one can take them to court. But he mentioned two of Mapanga and Mokashwa. He therefore says they must be investigated independently. You'll tell me, sir, if my internet keeps saying it's unstable here. Yeah. If you can tell us why he says so, on the Twitter, one of the presentation, I'm not sure if they've done it today, but on one of the slides they sent to us, they informed us that there are 29 people who are employed at that company. Why these two? How did he arrive at that? And then the last one before I move to the Council of Chief. I'm sorry, Chair, I think I'm coming down with flu. I think that's all. I think to the Council of TUT, also, what was the terms of reference for the independent assessor? And I think I must welcome the fact that the board has been reconstituted, because if you remember, Chair, last time when they appeared, the CEO, I think it was him who said the previous board meeting was postponed because it could not form quorum. So maybe with a smaller seven members, it will work. And it's people who, especially from the university council, it's people who volunteered their services there. So let's welcome that. Let's also welcome that they are reviewing the business model and they are restricting it to two subsidiaries, which is TIFE and two tech properties. My question on that is, was this part of the recommendations from the independent assessor? We also welcome that the performance contracts for the board and the performance contracts of the CEO as well. There's an issue of double dipping that has been raised here, that by the independent assessor. Is it true? If so, how do you plan on attending to this? And then I think it is a practice, that universities set in the university sector to establish private enterprises to generate such stream income, and I want to say that we are not against that practice, but council, we are for a proper governance who must be put in place. So we support. I understand now that you're saying you're putting proper governance things in place, and we welcome that. And I'm also happy, Chair, that the council has welcomed and acknowledged that there were loopholes in the business model of the entity, and the efforts by council to implement the recommendation of the independent assessor's report, I welcome. And I want to say it here that at least from where I am, we welcome that. I think maybe the question now is that how is council ensuring there is transparency to ensure that all stakeholders trust the process that has been put in place, and also want to welcome council's plans and the time frame and quarterly progress report that you spoke about. I think, Chair, I want to maybe also recommend that maybe moving forward, we must also get the quarterly report from the council on how far things are, not necessarily going to TUT. I think we have visited them for too often. And I think maybe if they can just through our committee secretary send us those quarterly reports, I think it will assist us moving forward. I think on recommendations, Chair, when they were doing the presentation, I think my network went off when they were doing the presentation of the presentation of by the university there, my network was just not in line, but I just want to make recommendations quickly based on what I saw. We agree that we welcome the proper responses given to us by the university this time. Allow them to continue. Sorry, this person who keeps my notes on my phone, so this one keeps calling my phone to study me. I did have two questions, I think, to the university. And that is the last 2 points, Chair. Can you just, can the list of TUT board members be submitted to the committee with their CVs sent to us to Parliament, even if it's after Parliament, Chair? Even if it's after this meeting, they must send to us so that we check. We saw the names there, but can they just send the names and their CVs so that at least we satisfy ourselves that they are fired, because we don't want tomorrow that people start complaining about other things. And then on recovery of projects, this is where my network started misbehaving. I think at the BBC was speaking, they spoke of recovering monies from contractors, but he did not, and I apologize if he did, I did not hear him speak about timelines and actions against those contractors that failed to execute this project. Is the university intending to ban the directors of those companies so that they don't do business with TUT again? And when is the money going to be recovered? I think Chairperson, and last recommendation is that maybe let's give them space to run their affairs, obviously after responding, to run their affairs and then give us quarterly reports on to tell, you know, I'll be the first one, Chairperson, to say that if TUTE can be a success, maybe others, including your Univen and others, can also learn one thing or two. Yes, they did not start well. Everybody acknowledges, but I think they might be on the right track. Let's give them some time. Obviously, we must just give them quarterly space to give us reports on a quarterly basis. And I think let's give them everything to support. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Litier. I don't see Mananiso's hand. See King.
I'm here.
Oh, you still want to speak? Okay, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by as well welcoming the report from the independent assessor, the chair, and the board. And one must say that I'm very worried about the picture that I'm seeing of only male in this particular position. So I believe that when we go down with different levels of leadership in the institutions, we do have young women, we do have women, people with disability, and those that we have interest on with regards to our demographics as a society. One must say as well, and agree with yourself and Honorable Litsiye, that indeed today the report is better than before. And for me, I get a sense in terms of continuity, in terms of leadership of the institution from where those who came before left. I'm partly covered on the issue of conflict of interest and the other issue that I wanted to know as well is with regards to the defaults in business. What is the plan in terms of without actually accounting and taking responsibility? Those who actually defaulted in terms of all the projects that they have actually presented on. The other thing, Chairperson, is with regards to the time frames. I would want to suggest that the university submit to us time frames with regards to their strategic plans on issues that they have outlined. For example, issues of stakeholder relations. What is the plan? Specific time frames with regards to that, so that as a PC we are able to take trace on whatever that they have committed on. The other issue, Chair, that one wants to welcome as well is the fact that on their presentation, they're speaking clear about issues of benchmarking. Obviously, we know so it is important that to them actually ensuring that they do thorough benchmarking so they get best knowledge, best practices, and best expertise with regards to how to deal with Tute. The other thing here one would want to say as well with on this institution is a comment with regards to say that I know we said that there must come a point where we just lose the chapter of actually interrogating issues of Tute. However, one wants to say on that, I think the next time we will be happy as the portfolio community to be called by the university to say come and look on one today, rather than us getting dramatic issues via whistling blowers. And one wants to say to them that they must continue to improve good governance by engaging all stakeholders, keep them informed, consult them, disagree and agree in the best of the student, not yourself. And I would want to say to them, they must allow new ideas from all stakeholders, because we know what we have experienced previously. You would find that there were no seriously tensions. However, people didn't use the stakeholder relations as governors in institutions. And lastly, one would want to say that it will take everybody as stakeholders in this institution to build the university. And more especially those who are surrounding our institutions, like the community stakeholder. That stakeholder, it is important, more especially on issues that they need to be educated on, about internal processes of supply chain, issues of policies with regards to what is their stake in of opportunities in the institution. Because we know that at most of the time, those particular programs are installed by that thing that you find people surrounding the area, knowing that it is an obligation that they get business a certain percent of opportunities. However, because of not having certain things that are required for compliance, you see them not getting those opportunities, and the other ones would be at the forefront fighting to say 1-2-3 is not going to happen. And that thing on its own, it actually disadvantages some of the infrastructure projects. So I would want to actually stress the fact of community stakeholders to say, where we see that there are challenges in terms of compliance, let us teach them so that it doesn't seem like people within the leadership, they've got their own interest of having so and so making business in the community where they don't stay. And I believe that people would only take responsibility of taking care of our institutions for the fact that at some point there's that exchange of economic development and empowerment. So I wish them all the best, Chairperson, and thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manami. So, Honorable King will be the last.
Good morning to everyone on the platform, and thank you as well for the presentation which was made. So I'm just basically going to ask two questions. In the presentation, it wasn't actually clearly set out to date how much the TUP combinedly invest into TUTEC to date. Because with a new board, obviously there should have been more investment that probably took place. Considering the tax implications that this will have, I would have loved to have seen also in the presentation the detailed implication that the tax base would have on TUT, on TUTE, and how that could have an impact on TUT as well. Then when you look at the balance sheet of TUT, it clearly indicates that the total equity in 2019 was 3.4 million rand, and then the total liabilities was 12.871 million rand. To me, that is a clear concern that the liquidity of this country, of this institution, will become a subject that we need to consider and discuss. How viable will it be then if you consider that TUTE would actually then continue well within the future? Is it only then going to be a concern of raising funds from student accommodation and then from research outputs? So I would have loved to have seen which other third stream incomes the TUTE was considering to venture into in order to offset the liquidity of TUTE for future business going concerns going forward. So for me, that is a concern. And the last question would be, I see your non-current liabilities basically say that you have loans from shareholders of 6.533 million rand. I would have loved to have known who are these shareholders and what is the level of input into TUTE as per se. And the last comment that I would like to make was that if you consider the investigation, the independent investigation that took place, it is quite alarming that some of the now directors are also now members of council, were also part of the previous council. I don't think they actually had a clear out of all board members. So how can you investigate yourself? The conflict of interest question, which was previously raised, is one concern that we need to consider, even though it was an independent investigation, and also that we know that he had some difficulty in getting responses from the board members themselves when independent investigation was conducted. So that is my concern, Chief Person. Thank you.
Okay. I see Honorable Mukacha also came in. I said you're the last, but let's allow Honorable Mukacha to speak.
Good morning, Chair. Apologies for raising my hand in the last minute. I truly apologize for that. Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues and honorable members. And thank you very much for all the presentations that have been made this morning. Mine are really quick because members have said a lot. I think one must agree, I don't know which member spoke to this, but one must agree that there's been greater detail with regards to the presentation that have been made to us this morning, and we appreciate that and all acknowledge that. And also bringing forth more clarity with regards to what's happening to Tute, and infrastructure projects, as well as the cases at the institution. But I think I'd also like clarity from Honorable Lisie, and I think Honorable Boshoff was also alluding to this in his remarks. With regards to the Tute being an external entity or an internal entity, particularly because other institutions might also take interest with regards to setting up entities of this nature. But I mean, in the presentation made made to us this morning, there's also been reference to institutions such as the likes of WITS, who already have such institutions that are existing. But I think the first clarity that Honorable Lucia spoke to, which I think is similar to Honorable Boshoff's question, is something that I also had interest in. So if we don't see perhaps what could seem as though it's a problematic sort of pattern in various institutions. But I think the clarity might assist how one further elaborates on that particular question. And I think, Chair, when looking at the infrastructure development projects that are outstanding or have been abandoned, the DHITS program or initiative to intervene in ensuring that infrastructure projects are being rolled out successfully is absolutely pivotal. And we'd like to perhaps know, I don't know if there's anyone from DHIT that's currently in this meeting, but maybe the university will be able to share with us if there has been ongoing conversation with DHIT with regards to strengthening the institution's capabilities to roll out their projects successfully. I think, I mean, one will not stress the importance of ensuring that these projects are successful in ensuring that the academic program of the institution is well supported. With regards to the contractors or the various companies that are contracted to contribute to the infrastructure development of the institution, picking up on the question that Honorable Mananiso spoke to, one would have great concern with regards to representational demographics with regards to that, and I think my interest is by and large related to the representation of women and the representation of young people of color. So I would like to know who are you giving these projects to, and to make sure that, you know, there's diversity in terms of that.
I don't know, I think something is wrong with Zoom, because every time I am on Zoom,
it does that.
My laptop does this. Oh, man. This thing is not even streaming on YouTube.
To
log in. She posted a paper and commented that, did you watch the Netflix documentary? She's like, nah, I just had smoke and the shit got cold, so I didn't let me try from some fresh stuff. There's a difference between steak and smoke, bro.
Recording in progress.
Non-profit companies, and typically SOAR's attitude on this is, as long as nobody is benefiting, no individual is benefiting, and that the income is going back into the mainstream activity of the entity which is doing this, they're prepared to not include that as taxable income. I must say I stand by it, I still believe that to forego 28% of your net income in tax would be, can I say, somewhat foolhardy if you're trying to generate income. The University of Stellenbosch and the University of Pretoria, as Honorable Leslie said, do have separate entities as well, separate companies. But their third stream income activities are something of a hybrid. And where they operate separate companies, That's where, for example, the University of Stellenbosch, they have a certain students will develop something. The university will then fund their whatever they've developed if they believe it's viable, and give the student a shareholding or a profit incentive within a company to actually operate that venture. So that's where they set up the separate activities. But I think the fact that the university is looking at this and considering it and, you know, looking at it carefully, I think is the appropriate thing to do. I must say the other costs associated with running a company, having a separate board, paying for board attendance meetings, having separate subcommittees, because you would be obliged to have an audit committee of the board, and potentially other subcommittees, expending money on audit fees, etc., etc. Running a company is expensive in itself, and, you know, that detracts from the third stream income activity. The other issue that came up was there was a question as to why two gentlemen were mentioned in the report, and others where we spoke about conflicts of interest were not mentioned. Those other conflicts of interest, we believe that in mentioning those, they might have valid reasons for having increased their life fee. Inherited money, or, you know, that money could have come from elsewhere, and we felt it inappropriate to name those individuals. The two individuals who were mentioned are mentioned in the report. They weren't only mentioned at the portfolio committee meeting today. They're actually named in the report. Those are, can I say, factual bases for they're either being paid to salaries, or they are, you know, being given increases way above what would be expected, and those are the two individuals where we believe that those should be independently investigated as well. There was a question as to why it was just those two, when Tutu employs a number more than just those two. We did look at all the employment contracts, we looked at the salary schedule, so those were the two that were, that, can I say, the flags went up with those two. The others, we didn't find any deficiencies in terms of the remuneration paid or the increases. Although I must say the whole aspect of, you know, adverts, we did see adverts for some of the employees that we employed. And the reason for us looking at that as well was because those were concerns that were raised in terms of complaints either to this committee chair or to the public protector or elsewhere. So that is why those were done. Chair, I think I've covered most of the questions. If I have missed anything, you know, I apologise, and I'll certainly respond to anything else should the members or you want anything else, Chair. But thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I think if there's something that we missed, then maybe members can follow up with the secretariat and then ask you to supplement that in writing. Can we get to the university? Maybe let's start with the infrastructure projects. Questions to the DVC operations?
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with your question around the high number of variation orders and whether these variation orders have been verified. In any construction project, we'll get the variation orders. So when they do the engineering and they do the drawings for this project, we normally say that when it goes on procurement or construction, it's 99%, it's been designed to 99%. So that you allow that 1% based on the variation site conditions that will change, and sometimes the client might want to change certain things. What has caused a lot of variation orders? If you do the analysis, it will be because of the community disruptions. It will be because of the long time it took to get this project to the construction stage and beyond the construction stage. There's a bit of scope that was left there and there, but it's not a lot of scope. And as well, it's the best practice to, when you do your project costing, to allow 10% contingency for this variation orders. So that has been done on most of our projects. In terms of the variation orders, there's only one variation order that I'm not sure of since I got here. I've only been in the job for 5 months, 6 months, and that variation order will need to be checked. But most of the variation orders that have been approved ever since I got here, they get verified by at least three people. I'll go to the question raised by Honorable Litsie. In terms of the timelines to recover the cost from the contractors, and in terms of blacklisting of the directors and the companies that gave us that defaulted, so the investors blacklisted the companies. We are in the process of blacklisting the directors. In terms of the timelines for recovery of the funds. The process now is a legal process, so it's underway. I can't say when will it be finished, based on the complexity of each and every case. At best, we can have a project plan, but that project plan will just be for the sake of having a project plan. Because it's now when the legal process is completed. I think that answers as well, that addresses the question from Honorable Manani Sutakdas, who defaulted, Kachwa.
Yes, sir.
Question on concept ongoing, legal. Issue. Lastly, going to Abul Mukasha's questions, in terms of improving the capacity to deliver capital projects, the TUT has improved the capacity to deliver capital projects by employing the services of external project management units. Internally, we're trying to, the new structure that we're developing, we're trying to appoint a team of engineers that will also capacitate the internal capacity to deliver capital projects. In terms of the work, who do we award the work to? Our adjudication template takes. Our adjudication template takes cognizance of the fact that we must award this contract. We must factor in the BEE status and whether this companies are owned by women or people with disabilities. And most of our contracts that we've awarded have gone to black-owned companies, including women-owned companies. Example of a woman-owned company that awarded the contract is Muteo, and they're currently busy with the Karankua North Multi-Purpose Teacher Training Center. In terms of the estimated cost to complete this project, it's been given in the presentation. It's all there. The information has been provided. It's all there, and the duration and the times that we expect to complete this project. Thank you, Chair. I think I've addressed the questions that have been directed to the Ops Environment. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we get is it the CEO, Mr. Mukwasi? Over to you, Nick.
Thank you, Chair. The first questions came from Honourable Boshoff, and I think similar sort of concern from Honourable Mkachwa, and was also touched on by Honourable Iti in terms of a separate entity. So at the beginning of the process within Council and in consideration of the third stream income, there were two sort of processes that the steering committee of the business development unit went through at that stage. One was to see what other institutions generally do, and it is a fact that a number of institutions, in fact, almost all financially stable and financially successful institutions have had third stream income entities that are dedicated and devoted to driving third stream income. And those have been separate entities. There was a study done by PwC around 2014, and that study shows that those entities end up contributing in the region of between 26% and 35% of the discretionary budget of a university. So it is a trend that was not invented by DUT. It is a trend that exists in the market or in the sector. So that was the first consideration. The second consideration is what would be suitable for DUT per se. And looking at historically, the Tute is not the first attempt at third stream income generation. In fact, it is at the very least the third attempt at third stream income generation. And the previous two attempts were solely in-house, were efforts in-house in the university to develop third stream income initiatives, which did not succeed. And as a result of that, we realized that a dedicated entity with a focus would be appropriate for the institution. So I think in that context, it made sense that it should go that route and build a dedicated team, a focused team around the generation of that system income. Any entity, any business initiative has got costs attended to it. So even if you run that within the business, there will be an element of and some extension of costs. But more importantly, there are trade-offs that then you have to deal with. The university environment is focused differently. And we also need to remember that the university environment operates within a framework of a different legislation or in a different legislative framework. It works within the legislative framework of higher education, which is a framework geared towards learning, teaching, and research. It is not a legislative framework geared towards commercial activity and income generation. So you needed to set up an entity that is geared towards that and works within the legislative framework that is enabling the start with the accommodation was a tactical move, for lack of a better word. Starting with the accommodation and SOP was a tactical move at that time, in order to create what at that point we called low hanging fruit, to be able to create quick stability and the financial strength to be able to then move into other areas. So it was a deliberate move. So the question was, the student accommodation in order to do something else, and what is that something else? That's something else, is to actually was actually to ensure that there is growth, and we keep talking in our strategic plan about the revenue mix, to create the kind of revenue mix that will give us the kinds of revenue as well as profitability that is fit for purpose. And the definition of fit for purpose in this case is that can eventually enable the entity to generate for the university the returns that would equate anything between 26% and 35% of the discretionary funding of the university. There was a question from Honorable Litsie in terms of the double DP, in terms of the salaries, and I think it is important to explain that there is no double DP. What has happened is that at an initial stage, and as part of building the founding team, and as part of finding ways of ensuring that we could move this new establishment forward, there was a discussion between myself and the Vice Chancellor, and the discussion within the relevant managed executives within the university around some of the skills that are within the university that we could utilize. And Mr. Mapanga was seconded to TAY. As it happens with many seconding, it doesn't only happen that way, but there are examples of many secondments or secondment arrangements where when the individual that is seconded moves to the other to an entity to which he's seconded, there may be an augmentation of the person. The scale of any sort of that person with the skills of that particular role that they would be playing in that. And that is what happened in the case of the Mapanga. Admittedly, the secondment has gone on too long, and we are definitely in discussions to resolve that. There were a number of other technical issues why it went on for this long, but it's being addressed. The list of board members and CVs, I believe that the registrar will be able to do that fairly easily. There was also a question from Honorable Sibiya in terms of how much TUT has invested. Into today, it's also in the financial presentation that we sent, but it is just over 27 million rand. And it was invested in the periods of 2018-2019. In 2020, there was no further investment or further capital injection because TUTAY could generate sufficient income. And since then, there hasn't been any further injection from the shareholder, and we do not expect any further injection from the shareholder. So that was the amount, and that amount was broken into two for purposes of clarity, and particularly for technical reasons, even from audit perspective. The amount in the region of 20.9 million was capital injection. An amount of 6.5 million was a loan for capex, for capital expenditure. The detailed analysis of tax treatment on TUT, in fact, through the auditors, PwC, we are going through that exercise together with TUT, and we've received we've engaged the services of other specialist consulting firms to work with us through the tax treatment and the implication of the tax treatment for TUT. It will be in the as part of the audit of the 2020 financial year, and it will be publicly available. The other system income considered in order to offset the liquidity of TUT, I think Honorable Sibiya, that's been extremely insightful. I think it is true that you need a certain revenue mix to be able to achieve certain levels of liquidity. However, when you look at the and in the presentation that was sent to the portfolio committee, there's a ratio analysis slide there. On that ratio analysis slide, you will see that there are liquidity and solvency ratios that are worked there. And what you see is that they're moving in the right direction. In 2019, the liquidity ratio was marginally above the benchmark, or was marginally above the norm. When the norm was 2.1, we are at 2.5. And it comes down from 2018 where it was at 6.5. So it's moving in the right direction, and in the 2020 financials, we are confident that we are within the liquidity and solvency ranges. And also it is not unusual, because that is what's happening when a business is new. 2018 was a year with no revenue, and therefore it was to be expected that liquidity and solvency ratios would be the way they were. Loans from shareholders, there's only one shareholder, and that shareholder is TUT Enterprise, so that's 6.5 million. So it's TUT University. That 6.5 comes from TUT University. And the question was asked as to how university council can investigate itself. I think the chair of council will deal with that. There were no difficulties in terms of answers from the board members that were interviewed. It is not in the investigation report, nor in his presentation today. The Honourable Mkhatshwa, the one question that I haven't answered, there were two, one related to the separate entity, which I've already responded to, is a diversity in terms of representativity of women. I think this is where I'm proud to say that at TUTE we've made serious strides. In fact, the majority of employees at TUTE are women, in the ratio of 52% women, 48% men. There is the TIES, which is a subsidiary of TUT Enterprise Holdings. TIES is a fully women-run company. In fact, there is only one man in the team of nine people, and the chair of the board is a woman. The CEO, the MD of the company is a woman, and all the essential and key positions in the company are held by women. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Chair, over to you. I don't know whether you wanted the Vice Chancellor to start first. We don't have much time. We need to adopt a report in our units. I'm not sure whether
that is
something, or you can wrap up.
Thanks, Chair. I'll allow the VC just to breathe a bit and comment, then I'll close, if you don't mind, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yeah, I will be short. There was a question by Honourable Boshoff, third stream to do what with? This is the question that nobody asked yet. All universities in South Africa are currently under financial pressure. That's the first stream income is the subsidy we are getting. It's dwindling. We, a week, 2 days ago, received a statement from the ministry where the subsidy due to the COVID expenditures by government is dwindling. The second stream income is the tuition fee income. 90% of our students, Chair, of the biggest contact university in South Africa are from the poorest of the poor. They come from deep rural. So in the area of the second stream income, we have some serious substantive student debt. Not that our students do not want to pay, but they are simply not in a position to pay normally. So the only way for us, and this is an international global phenomenon that universities embark on, third stream income. So the third stream income is not to make profit, Chair. We are a public university. We work on surplus of funding. Now, the money that we need to generate is a very, it's an imperative to us. What do we want to do with the money? The surplus money actually will go to the academic project. University is the University of Technology, where the bulk of our students are using state-of-the-art equipment, cutting-edge technology. We cannot work on outdated equipment for our students. Subsidy is not enough. Our kids are extremely poor, deep rural, so the first-stream income is not an option that we have. And Chair, we cannot just transplant what the big five in the country is doing. We are a black university. We cannot do what WITS is doing, what UP is doing, what Stellenbosch is doing. We need to come with our own unique model. We started with an in-house project, namely the business development unit, with its shortcomings. Now, when you look at all universities, our core business, Chair, is teaching, learning, and research and community engagement. We are not in the business of accommodation, etc. Therefore, you establish a separate entity to drive that, because your energy should be in the academic project, Chair. Lastly, we cannot compare apples with bananas. We are active in five provinces, Chair. One of our campuses in Shoshanguve has about 22,000 students. It is actually a university on its own. And when you look at our township campuses, Chair, there's no accommodation. So you need special efforts to provide accommodation to our kids, because this is linked to their success in the university. Therefore, the models that we are using, Chair, the first stream policy, Chair, is linked to the financial growth strategy of this university. There should be a very deep understanding why this university started with the two-step project, Chair. I will pause here, but just to indicate, we are not here for surplus or for profits, for luxury items, Chair. We are here to ensure quality, relevant, decolonized education for our students, Chair, I pause. Thank you.
Thank you, VC Chairperson. After that statement by my Vice Chancellor, it's difficult for me to say much. I think it demonstrates the passion about these matters and how sincere we are at the university. Chair, if you allow me, I just want to summarize a few points fairly quickly. First, let me start with the terms of reference. I think it's a very, very important question. And I want you to refer to the members of the portfolio committee to the terms of a J, which states that there must be a benchmarking exercise with other public institutions in terms of the framework, operation, and similar activities attached to them. Now, part of the terms of reference is the deliverables. Very, very important that we refer to page 7, the deliverables. Well, very clear that there must be a part of the deliverables, there must be a report of finding of the benchmarking exercise, at least two public entities on structure, governance, finances, business model, as well as the reporting mechanism of those entities. It's a very clear deliverable that we expect at the council. If we look into the entire report, Chairperson, it's only about 3 pages that refer to the benchmarking exercise. We talked about the reference to website review and telephone calls, what the council expected. What the detailed findings, because that's very important. Like I said, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. We're trying to do what other universities have done. And that is why, Chairperson, we've instructed the incoming boards to do a detailed benchmarking exercise, go out there, visit our institutions, see what works, what the lessons have been, we can learn from them, so that we can apply the best practices. And I like what was read by one of the MPs to say, we must learn from other people, and I think we're committed as a university to say, we want this project to succeed, but we know very much that we can do that when we learn other people, we engage other stakeholders. I just want to highlight that point, Chair, because when we did the assessment, it was not a free exercise. You know, we understand money, most of us, but we did pay Mr. Tennyson for his report, which is about 80 days of work, 700,000 rand, so close to 1 million rand. We would have hoped that part of that investment will give us a detailed report in terms of what we see from a benchmarking exercise, Chair. Yeah. And on the second point, Chair, other matters that were raised by the members of the portfolio committee, we welcome them. We are prepared to provide quarterly reports in terms of the performance of 2-10.
will be happy to provide the service of the members of a board that has been seconded to the board. We are more than willing to provide update in terms of our progress from the stakeholder management. We are planning to put together, as part of the Bureau Reserve Board, is to put together a state stakeholder management exercise and engagement process. We're happy to share it with the Portfolio Committee. We definitely welcome engagement from a Portfolio Committee in terms of ideas. I think it's a brilliant idea that, you know, we should collaborate. And I've chairperson, I've passed in the past to say we'll be happy to host the Portfolio Committee, that we should not start a meeting under circumstances like this. But we engage. You know, we talk about how best all of us can make universities succeed, and especially universities like us, who is a predominantly black university. So we believe that we are part of a societal agenda. We believe that we represent our society much, and we're willing to help you to work with different stakeholders. As far as the shareholding of TUTE, TUTE is 100% owned by the university. We don't have a private or external shareholders, so it's in our best interest, the university, to make sure that Twitter works, because we are the only one actually funding the institution, and hence it's important for us that we see some returns from a university perspective. The issue of gender and female and young people representation, I couldn't concur more. We, chairperson, would like to consider ourselves a progressive university. You know, this is not about TUTE alone, but the university as a whole. I'm pleased to announce that we recently appointed two DVCs, one for operations and one for research, young, dynamic, black, one is a male, just presented Dr. Charlie, and the other one she's a female, Dr. Zampaga. And I think we are very sincere in our drive. It's a big transformation project that we're driving at TUT to make sure that TUT is truly reflective of its demographics, and we want to bring young people to the academic space. It's very important that we do so, and I think we welcome ideas and conversation in terms of how we make sure that this university truly reflects, and I said in my opening remarks, Chairperson, that we are the biggest university of technology in Africa, and we should take the lead in terms of driving demographic representations. I fully agree with that one, and I'm glad that the Portfolio Committee has raised that, and we definitely will work with the Portfolio Committee on that one. In closing, Chairperson, from my side and on behalf of the university and all my stakeholders, you know, this has been a university's only drive to attract the private partnership. We want to make sure that our students get access to bursaries. We want to make sure that our students get the best jobs out there. We want to make sure that our students have the best facilities. We live in the age of 4R and age of work, and we believe that TUT has got a role to play. It's very important that all of us, we protect the brand equity of the university so that it can be attractive from that perspective. And we are open, transparent, and willing to work with the Portfolio Committee in terms of us addressing some of the issues. Twitter, we understand it's a new project, we want to learn, and I think a comment was made that if we do get it right, hopefully we can create the blueprint for other black universities to follow the lead. You know, you start somewhere, and every time you start, you make a mistake, and that's why we welcome the Denison report in open arms and engagement with Portfolio, because we should believe that this project would just go beyond just TUT, but it could be a blueprint that if we get it right, we can share with other universities in terms of how we do this thing. This is not a unique sort of camp thing, it's a global thing, and as a university of technology, we are, I think, blessed that we could take lead in terms of bringing some of these emerging technologies to life and exposing our students and making sure that we all of us do a role in terms of transforming our society. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, the Chair of Council, and we must thank everybody who has participated, and Mr. Denison, the the leadership of the university is led by the chairperson, Mr. Magnoni, the VC, and everybody else. I see today you have prepared better for us. You don't jump from one seat to the other, so I see you've made maximum use of technology there.
Chairperson, you do listen when you speak.
Yeah, so at least preparation is better today. I think the preparation is better not only in terms of appearance and all of that, but also in terms of form. I think I must say that today you are better prepared for us, and I personally am quite happy with the contents of your presentation. I think you did well to prepare, because the last time what we were not happy with, my apologies for that. We were not happy with the fact that you did not take time to respond to what we think was an important report of the independent assessor. But today, I think the chair of council covered a lot of ground in responding to each of the issues that are there. And of course, there are areas where the council is saying that we do acknowledge this point that has been raised by the independent assessor. For instance, issues around governance, the relationship between the entity and the university. So you are not just being dismissive. You critique where you critique, you embrace the points that are proper in terms of advancing good governance. And I think that I think I represent the committee saying that I think we are happy with the responses of the University Council, and also the process that the University Council has set in motion to further follow up on some of the issues that are raised by the independent assessor. So I think we are happy with that. I must confirm that we did invite Mr. Dennison. We thought that it is proper that we can't talk about the report without the person who prepared the report presenting it. It's normally the procedure when we do our issues. If we consider a report, we invite the author. So today we are considering the responses of the university to the report. So we thought, let's just get to have a sense of the report before we get to go to the responses. I think it is only logical that we had to do that. I thought the administration, the secretariat, has communicated the agenda of today, which was very clearly that we're going to receive first the report. Now, I think before I get to the way forward, let me just say on the three issues, the issue of the outstanding DC, they are no longer DC, that involves the senior officials. We're happy with that. We got a report that there was a mutual separation agreement, which is entirely within the rights of the parties if they negotiate to separate. Ours, in our interest is not to, is to find a situation where you don't get a person sitting at home for 2 years while being paid and not somebody else acting in that position. So that is where we're coming from, and I think we're happy that the matter has been finally resolved. It is not for us to prescribe the manner of resolving the problem, but what is our interest is that the issue gets resolved, and we're happy that it has been resolved. on the infrastructure project, I must say that I'm still not, I'm still not happy with the, and I think the members did express the thing about the running cost of implementing infrastructure projects, which are in the main caused by these variations. Well, there are time delays that cost, there are issues about performance of the contractors, which cause this thing, but this issue of variation, and I hear that the DVC say variation, any project gets variation. I'm not sure whether I would agree with that. Because you see, variation by its very definition means that you vary the original scope of the project. And that's why in project management, you are not allowed, in fact, I think it is in the Act, in the law, you are not allowed to exceed 20% of the cost of the project. You are not allowed to vary it beyond 20%. Because variation, if we do a proper project management, they should not exist, because you must factor in some of the things that may come, like as I said, in contingencies and in whatever. So so I think if we were to accept that every project will have variation, will have the cost overruns, I think we should not plan things like that. We should not plan like what happened in Eskom, where there were cost overruns of billions and billions of rands, which now have cost the state so much money. We are now experiencing all this load shedding. The book of Eskom is sitting with a lot of debt because there are things that could have been avoided if there was proper project management. And I don't think that we should accept that there must be, we must plan for more money to be spent on the project. We must do the design in such a way that whatever that is estimated to cost, because these are professionals. You employ engineers to do these designs, they must be professionals. They must plan in such a way that their estimate is almost closer to what the project will cost. So I think I don't know what has happened, because most of the projects have got all this variation and all. I'm not sure whether the university has done, has looked at each one of them. I think you presented the figures. But I think that we require some kind of an independent verification audit to look at each of them, whether there has been value for money, whether this additional costs were warranted or they were not warranted, whether there has been consequence management, because not only consequence management must start even with the appointed engineers. Your estimates, your design, you design like this, and then later on you change. Your designs, were they correct or they were not correct? So things must start from there. There must be consequence management. I don't think that it's something that we must accept, that we must always have this cost overruns. So I think we need an independent detailed audit to be conducted, so that we can understand the issues that I am talking about of the project value, whether there was money, there was value for money that was derived. And all those who have been involved in those things, there must be consequences. Consequence management must start everywhere else where there's things like that. I think let's request that must be done. And be presented to council, and the council will then give us a report as soon as that has been completed. So let's move to the last issue, which is And you know, there was a, on the infrastructure project, there was a, one project in Kharankuwa. When we were there doing the oversight, we were told that it will be completed soon, the contractor has been appointed and all of that. And I see even these projects are still on the outstanding list. So let's ask the we know that it is not you who was responsible for this. You've just been appointed as the DVC for operations. So, of course, as a successor, you must take the punches. But we know you are not responsible for that. But I don't think we can just step off this one without asking that there must be an audit so that the council, the management and council satisfy themselves that everything else has been above board, that there is enough consequences, who are the project managers that we involve, how much are you recovering from them, so that they can be known publicly that these guys messed up at TUT. We don't want to see them popping at VES or at Valley University of Technology or UJ or anywhere, any of our institutions. Now, if we, let's step off that one. Now, the issue of leveraging tax stream income, it's a matter that almost all the universities are faced with. Now, I think that from our side, we don't understand the extent to which the universities have embarked on this initiative. And so, in as far as that is concerned, we'll ask that the department, I know that there is an advisor to the minister who are attending this meeting, and there are some officials from the department. So we will ask that the department must give us a report, do some kind of some work to try and determine which universities have got which entities that are trying to leverage that stream income. Some universities are doing it much, much better because they've been in the game for some time. But they are in the game because they have got the necessary resources to be in the game and to give their entities are much more of a competitive advantage. So we'll ask that the department must do that for us, and at some point we'll ask the department to come and brief us, as well as the University of South Africa as the Association of Vice Chancellors. So to understand what each university is doing, what is their thinking. Because what the Vice Chancellor is raising is a reality. It's a fact. They are declining funding to the system as a whole of higher education, even the TVETs. One observation that we made, I think, in the past is that there's increasing levels of student funding in the form of NSFAS. NSFAS now has got a budget of 46 billion. And the university, the fund that is supposed, the money that is supposed to fund the universities is declining. And so there will come a point where there will either be an equality or the money that funds the students will be more than that which goes to the university. And that is what the university considers them as the first stream income. It is used to fund the academic programs, the lecturers, the infrastructure, and all of that. So it's declining in real terms. So, and of course the tuition fees, because of the current economic conditions, many of our students are not able, many of their families, their parents are not able to continue to afford to pay tuition fees. So there is a real need to leverage this tax stream income. That's why all of us are saying we are not opposed to it. And we've never been opposed to it. Our concern from the beginning has always been about governance. How is it being managed? Is it properly done? Is it managed in a manner that gives confidence to the university community that this is done properly? So I think we will do that. But with regard to the specific issues arising from this discussion and the report and the responses of the university, I think we welcome, as I said, the report by Council, the responses and the commitments that Council has made. We know that the Council has requested a quarterly report on progress, which is the same report that we'll ask that the Council, after considering this matter in July, must report also to the Portfolio Committee, first in July and then quarterly thereafter, on the progress that is being made in following up on some of the issues that were raised, issues which have not been properly ventilated here around the matters of conflict of interest. Whether is there such a thing or there's not such a thing, and how is the university, how is the board of PTAR responding to that? There are issues raised by around irregular employment practices which they have not been properly ventilated, so that progress report must also cover that as to what is it that the board has done. Has the board looked at this? Is it happy? What is the explanation that we can get out of that? And of course, the relationship between the TUT and TUTEL, the governance relationship, that must be governed by a strong memorandum of memorandum of understanding or MOI. the progress that exists there, whether it has been finalized or not. The board says there must be a performance contract that must govern the board. Well, the council says that there must be a performance contract that must govern the board, which has been reconstituted. And one of the key performance areas is to recover the loan that has been advanced to the entity. So we will request progress reporting as far as that is concerned on the performance and the extent to which that performance area has been covered. The benchmarking exercise is one of the tasks given to the new board, whether has it been done between TUTEL and other entities and so forth. So that must also be covered in the report that we must get post July, and then subsequently quarterly. But I think there is a sort of a unanimous view in the committee that we must. This chapter must come to an end, and I think today's engagement sort of begins to close that curtain, although not completely closed, because I think there's still some quarterly reports, but we will be receiving them for purposes of noting what is happening. We do not want to substitute the task or the responsibility of the University Council. The council must continue to function. The board that has been constituted together with management of the entity must continue to do their work. I think we're simply asking this report so that we get a sense that everything else is going well. Whatever commitments are made are going to be followed up. So we need to just get that sense. But I think I can tell you that you are going to see lots of our faces in front of you, because we also need to focus on the very big portfolio that we have, of higher education, looking at the TVS, looking at all the SITAs, looking at the two departments, looking at all the entities, making sure that they all account to us. So we will do that. But yeah, we had a very good interaction. As I said, I think the committee is quite happy with the content, the substance of the engagement and the preparation. We may not agree with one or two issues that came out, but at the end of the day, the governance structure of the university is the council. And the reason why we've been very close to the council and the university was to make sure that the council executes its responsibility and governs the university in a proper manner, in a manner that respects the fact that this is a public university, these are public resources, these are resources that are employed and spent on behalf of the people of this country, and they must be done properly. When you exercise public power, you must exercise it properly and, as others say, judiciously. You know, with the kind of humility that you can master. Otherwise, thank you very much. We are done with TVT. We are going to be on our own, but you can continue to join us if you want to. We just want to finalize the internal business of the committee. There are minutes that we need to. Thank you very much, Chair and the VC. Amore, can we get to the minutes?
Yes, Chairperson. Minutes the 23rd of March. Thereafter, we have 7th, 11th, 12th, 15th, 26th May.
Okay.
For the minutes that we have. And then we also have the report.
Okay. Let's start with the minutes. Is there anybody who wants to comment on all the sets of the minutes? As distributed. No comment. Any mover?
Yes, Chair, I raised my hand to move for the adoption of all the minutes. They were given to us on time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There is a mover from Honorable Lucia. Any seconder?
Thank you, Chair. I'm seconding the adoption of the minutes.
Okay. Any dissenting view? No dissenting view. The minutes are therefore agreed to. The report, which report do we start with?
So we have quarterly reports of the department as well as the education and training as well as the DSR. So it goes to report.
The quarterly report. You say we've got three quarterly reports?
Yes.
Okay.
It's two Chairperson. It's the Department of Education and Training as well as DSI headquarters reports.
Okay. 22 I put before you members those reports for your comments and adoption, if you agree. Any comment, or can I get a mover? Members, can you, are you still on the platform?
I move.
Honorable Lucia moves. Seconder.
I move for the adoption, Chair.
Yeah. Move the seconder.
I'm seconding the adoption, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Mom Sphere. Any dissenting view? In the absence of any dissenting view, the reports are therefore agreed to. The last report, I think it was on NSFAS and the DUT,
no? No, Chair, the NSFAS visit on the 18th of Wednesday, 18th of May.
Yeah, the NSFAS visit. Any view there? Can I get a mover? Okay, there was something there, Anele, I just can't get it now. It was on the, I think, observation or recommendations. I just want to correct just a small portion there. I can't get it. But yeah, I'll suggest it later on. But it's not going to make any material changes. Any mover? Honorable Mr. are you still moving?
I moved, Chair.
I'm moving, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Mr. moves. Honorable Mr. a second. No defending view. DUT is the last report,
no? No, those are the two reports.
Oh, there was no report of DUT, okay.
No.
Alright. Thank you very much, members. We are done with the report. Thank you very much for attending. Let's take a break. Come back at 2. Listen to the debate of the presidency. I think the president will be addressing and other members will be engaging. I think this is our last meeting of the term. And I must thank all the members for availing yourselves to attend all these meetings of the portfolio committee. And for engaging in the manner that we engage, it has been quite a good experience having all of you interrogating the matters that are brought before us. I get some few suggestions about the program, but I think generally all the members are quite happy with how the program is determined and unfolding. So if you have got suggestions, please just share it with me. Not all of the issues may be on the program, but we'll try as much as possible to accommodate all the members. Otherwise, thank you very much, honorable members. Wish you all the best in your constituency period as you arrive on Friday. We'll see each other again, I think, is it July? I think, yeah, see each other sometime in July when you come back and engage in the issues in the committee. Thank you very much, this meeting is adjourned.
Don't leave the chair.
Don't leave the chair.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Great, Chairperson.